are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, August 10th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I am wearing a collarless shirt. It's that casual. Super hot out. And as such, on the program today, Heather Parton from the Uber blog Hullabaloo will be on the program, looking back on this wretched week that was. Also joining us, Matt Chrisman from, is it Chappaquiddick Trap House will be here.
Chappaquiddick Trap House.
To look back on the...
There should have been one.
Even more vile aspects of this week. Also on the program, we knew there were P-tapes. And now Omarosa says there are N-tapes.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It's amazing he hasn't said that publicly, actually.
Yep. And your tax dollars, in fact, our tax dollars at work. Dozens of Yemeni's children killed by U.S.-backed Saudi airstrike. Maybe we should revisit that policy. New polls show 1 in 5 Trump voters have soured on Donald Trump. And corner-cutting kickback campaign cash money Chris Collins used campaign funds for his criminal defense fund.
Nice.
Melania's ask revealed she's now officially an anchor bride. And the Army pauses its despicable practice of deporting immigrant recruits. And a judge threatens Attorney General Sessions with contempt. Meanwhile, Puerto Rico determines that 1,300 more have died than the official tally has stated in Hurricane Maria. And D.C. gears up for a white supremacist parade, and NPR celebrates with a polite debate. Just a reminder, 8 children accidentally shot every day in America with unsecured firearms in the home. And lastly, the Sinclair Tribune deal officially dead. Somebody was either worried about Inspector General reports or perhaps that Democrats may win and call Agitpie to account for himself. But
this was a catch 22.
It was a catch 22. That happened. Folks, we should just tell you, if you're listening to the program, this is always awkward. For those of you who are viewing the program, you will notice that we are not live streaming. So you are not seeing this because we had a strike against our account. You know, some of our titling is sarcastic. And now I know that the way that we're supposed to do this on YouTube is talk about that we're being politically silenced, that there is a large conspiracy to silence us. This is typical of the problems in America, and we should all be on red alert for the infringement upon our First Amendment rights to monetize videos. But the truth is that we sometimes use sarcasm in our titling. And we did one back in, I don't know when it was, frankly. It didn't give me the date. But at one point, you'll recall that Chick-fil-A had as a policy, and I can't remember the specifics of the policy, but they were just virulently anti-gay in some fashion. And we're using this as actually a sales tool. So we, in a title, suggested, enjoy a gay-hating processed chicken sandwich today at Chick-fil-A, something to that effect. And apparently the YouTube bots have determined that that is hate speech. And in fact, it is the opposite. We are criticizing a commercial enterprise for having anti-LGBT policies. I have to say, I've been here before. And, you know, occasionally, you know, I at least in this instance, I suspect it's a bot. It is not someone who is in bad faith claiming that we don't like gay people and we are promoting the eating of processed chicken sandwiches. But it worked out pretty well last time. So maybe things will go well with this. I just wanted to put that out there. So, you know, for folks who are listening to the show as opposed to viewing it as they normally do, or people who are watching it later on YouTube, because we don't have the live stream up today, hopefully we will get that fixed forthwith, as it were. Folks, just want to say, remind you, BetterHelp is a sponsor of this program. It's affordable, private online counseling. You get unlimited access to licensed, trained, fully accredited therapists. That's perfect for you. You can do it on your phone, on your computer. You can do it through text, voice, or video chat. I would do voice or video chat. Text, but you can if that's what you want.
Voice is the happy medium.
Yeah. LGBT friendly. It's great for couples counseling, anything else you're going through in life right now. You can do this as a long-term solution for long-term therapy needs or a short-term solution. All you need to do is go to betterhelp.com/majority. You fill out a questionnaire. They match you with a counselor who's perfect for you. You can start counseling today. It's less expensive than an in-person counseling, but you're still getting great help from licensed professionals. And if you have trouble affording it, BetterHelp even has financial aid available, so they will knock something off the normal price for you. You're always connected to your counselor. You have unlimited access, which means you can talk to them every day if you want. And if you're one of those people who have never, you know, been to therapy, this is also a good way of getting a sense of what it's like. I mean, I imagine... I don't know. I go through life just assuming everybody has no problem with going to a therapist, but I suspect there are still people for some who it's stigmatized or they think it's weird or whatnot. But maybe you're not comfortable talking to a therapist in person. You don't have time. You can't afford it. BetterHelp solves all of these problems. You can sign up right now on quality professional therapy by going to betterhelp.com/majority. Folks, this is big news. Today is August 10th, but you know what yesterday was? It was August 9th. Or as Donald Trump will tell you, it was Space Day. Space Day or Space Force Day?
I think Space Force Day.
All right, are we going to play this later? Let's play this clip later of Pence announcing it and just go to... And the way that the president celebrated is Mike Pence got out and gave a speech. We'll talk about that later in the program. But this is very exciting, and this is exactly the type of innovation that we need from our government. This is incredibly disruptive, and
it is.
So it's
it is in fact disruptive.
It's blowing the old way of doing things right out the window, folks. Here is an email from the Trump Pence Make America Again Committee. Jesus, and it says, "Friend, President Trump wants a space force." A groundbreaking endeavor for the future of America and the final frontier. I'm not sure that groundbreaking is really the best metaphor for there. But that's
cloud fine. Breaking.
Yes. We're going to shatter the universe. As a way to celebrate President Trump's huge announcement, our campaign will be selling a new line of gear. Nice. But first, we have to make a final decision on the design we will use to commemorate President Trump's new Space Force. And he wants you to have a say. You can vote for your favorite logo. This is, I think, what's going to ultimately be the official logo of the Space Force. And, man, these are garbage in many respects, right? Like, it is. But here you go. You can vote for one of these Space Force.
I totally am voting for the Mars Awaits in the lower right-hand corner.
There you go. Mars, bitches.
Mars.
And thanks, Brad Parscale, campaign manager, Donald Trump for 2020. So they're raising money.
That's a good name for that.
By allowing their email list to choose the logo of the next branch of the U.S. military.
What is the on the top of the copy there? The Trump-Pence Trump Make America Great Again Committee.
Why yeah, that's
Trump,
the pack.
Why is Trump Make America Great Again? That sounds
Trump
like,
Make America Trump Great Again.
Like they're
it's like Hulk just, mad.
Yeah,
Trump okay. Make America Great
he
Again.
He doesn't want Pence in that specific line. That's
right. It's true.
It's Trump and Pence. But
why do
I
we have Pence?
It, yeah.
Why is Pence in there?
Right.
Maybe make it a little smaller. So there it is, folks. Selling off the naming rights. Of a of something that should not exist in the first place. Apparently, yeah. Mattis has signed off on this now.
It's keeping him busy, all right?
That's true.
Apparently, you mean yeah, right? The Fallujah Mattis has signed off on space warfare.
Okay.
Yeah, what a shock!
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you don't want to divert any resources away from the real wars you could have.
He's like,
down
look,
on the ground.
This idiot, whatever, we could like shoot a laser beam into Tehran. It's fine. Let's
at first,
it.
He wasn't on board, but now I think he's. This is his last.
But
gasp.
Don't they have to use things like that as like trinkets?
Shit.
Like, oh, yeah. I really oppose that, Mr. President. What yeah. about this other thing? How about we make a deal?
I don't
he
even know.
If,
I have a feeling it's just more like, yes, Mr. President, great idea. And. All right, folks,
yeah, whatever.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Digby about some of the week's highlights. We'll be back in just a moment.
I left your house when you were sleeping. Had incorrectly got my head screwed on. Tried to find a way to ride a note. Couldn't get your shower to work. I sort of wish that it was rain. Rifle through your pockets, and you find them on your face. But who I can escape it? And no more being
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone, ladies and gentlemen. Wait, do we have a theme song? How do we not have a theme song for her yet? Ladies and gentlemen, you may know her from Salon.com or from her popular blog, Hullabaloo, Heather Digby Parton. Hello, Heather.
Hey, Sam. How are you?
Well, fine. As you can see, our stream is down, and it really, it's not a huge part. It's just like it's one of anything that when you do something like this, everything's so habitual that if anything is not happening, it freaks you out. And so I'm a little freaked out. But aside from that, all is well. Let's start with Chris Collins this week. I mean, because what's been interesting is the Democrats, I think, are trying to pivot to the corruption that is, you know, part and parcel of the of this era, right? I mean, but it's almost like the corruption is really low rent, it feels like, and not as it just doesn't have the ability to. It's just this is such a bizarre era that it doesn't seem to have the same resonance, right? I mean, I'm comparing it to 2006, where corruption was the number one thing that brought the Democrats into the House in 2006.
Well, I think at the time, I mean, I agree with you, but I think at the time that in 2006, even, you know, the Republicans were still sort of pretending that they cared about that. That was an issue that had some salience to them and their voters, and they still cared. You know, that was also the election that brought down Mark Foley in Florida, the representative who was, you know, caught making you know, texting and making passes at some of the young male pages in the House. And there was this whole kind of just this sleaze that was, you know, swirling around the Republican Party. And they acted, I don't know if they did care, but they acted like they cared. They acted like this was something that, you know, they should be ashamed of.
Right.
Now, and under Trump, this is just, they don't care. I mean, and they're making it obvious that they don't care. They don't have any shame about it. They are acting like, you know, to the extent that they even deny it, it's just, I know you are, but what am I? You know, they're accusing other people. So it just doesn't have the same salience anymore because they have given up on the idea, given up. Either they've revealed, I think is a better way of putting it. That this is just not an issue for them, that being corrupt in government is just natural. And I think that they, you know, Donald Trump in a certain way kind of ran on that. He used to say that, you know, I know how it's done because I used to do it. When asked about his tax returns, he said that, you know, yeah, I didn't pay taxes because I'm smart. You know, that sort of thing, people, his voters anyway, and Republican voters generally, kind of, well, yeah, well, that's how it is. You know, there's just a nihilistic sort of cynicism that just runs through the Republican Party now, and I just don't think they care. So, it, you know, it's, I think other people care. I think, you know, the rest of the majority of the country still cares about that. But without the other side having any reaction to it, I think it's hard to sort of make a, you know, make it into a big electoral issue because there just doesn't seem to be any. They look at you and go, yeah, so, you know, whatever.
It's interesting. I mean, because this week we had this story about Chris Collins, right, who and there had been reporting, I think, contemporaneous or at one point around the Tom Price nomination that the guy was going around giving insider tips to fellow congressmen, making them all wealthy. He said he made half of Buffalo wealthy millionaires. Ostensibly, at least in part, through this company that he sat on the board, and he owns, I don't know, like 17-20% of the stock. It's an Australian pharmaceutical company, I think it is, that was going to make a drug that was going to help treat MS. So he gets the call from the CEO that we failed our clinical tests. He immediately calls his son, tells his son to dump all the stock that the son can. And then apparently also has been using campaign funds to provide for his defense in the court. And you know what's amazing? The guy's worth like $25 million. I mean, like, pay for your own frickin' defense lawyer, really? I mean, it's just it's cheap, too. But then there's the story of the VA where three random rich guys who belong to the Mar-a-Lago club have been basically running the VA insofar as they're interested in certain policy questions because they own some type of enterprise that would make money off of this. I mean, there's a quality to this corruption that is like small town politics, where it's just like the businessmen just see the government apparatus as a way of making money, beginning, middle, end, that's it. And there's some sort of like simpatico amongst all of them about it. And what is interesting about this is, you know, I just pre-recorded an interview yesterday that I think we're going to run in a couple of weeks on mesmerism, which I don't know if people are terribly familiar with this, but it was like more or less hucksters. Maybe they weren't perceived themselves as hucksters, but they would go around to explain, you know, explain away spiritualism with some form of supposed science. Like, I use this electric rod and touch this woman's brain and she becomes a clairvoyant. And then they would get debunked, but they would end up becoming their own version of mesmerists by debunking. And the author of this piece had written a story, an op-ed for the New York Times, saying that, you know, part of the attitude is that, like, you know, when everybody's a con man, you want your own con man. Even if you know that they're conning you on some level, they're still saying, like, I can navigate this because I understand what a con is all about. And on some level, there's that feeling of that. Like people are like, yeah, everything's corrupt. So at least we're seeing their corruption.
Right. And that's the Donald Trump pitch was, I know how corrupt everything is because I used to be the guy that they came to for money, you know, and they'll do anything. Remember, he would say, they'll do anything, yes. They ask you for money, I mean, they would do anything. And he would say that on the stump, and they'd all cheer because it's exactly what you just described. He was their guy who understood the corruption because he'd been one, and he knew how to deal with it. He'd be doing it on their behalf instead of on, you know, I don't know, the big city slickers or whatever. That's very interesting, the mesmerizing thing, because that's kind of, there's a whole, I mean, I'll be interested to hear that interview. That's an interesting concept I hadn't thought of before.
And it does also, I mean, look, you know, there is a critique of the Obama administration that I think, you know, we did real time, frankly, that, and you know, starting really in 08 when he was, or 09, I guess, when he was saying we've got to turn the page, the lack of holding people to account, whether it was the Bush administration from a torture standpoint or whether it was, you know, Steve Mnuchin should be in jail because of what he did at Countrywide, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Eric Holder saying, you know, well, you know, having a policy of we can't jail bankers because, you know, of what it would do to the system. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of that lends credence to that notion of like everybody's running a con. So why not at the very least have the guy who's honest enough to tell you that he's conning you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that completely. And I think, look, it goes to the thesis of, you know, Chris Hayes' book, The Twilight of the Elite.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, this failure of the meritocracy to deliver. And, you know, we had been there for a long, like, decades, you know, and if you look back at the 1960s, you know, John Kennedy, we're going to go to the moon and we're going to, you know, we're progress and the future and all this stuff was going to deliver all this stuff. And it did deliver to a certain extent. But at some point in the last couple of decades anyway, and maybe more, we've seen that whole, you know, I mean, the American dream took a major hit and didn't recover. And so for a lot of people, it was just like, yeah, I mean, when Trump was saying the system is rigged, you know, he was speaking truth to a lot of people. I mean, he's the ultimate con man, of course, so he was delivering his own, you know, snake oil. But nonetheless, that particular message that spoke to something that people had, you know, was an undercurrent in American political life, cultural life, all the way along. And you see, I mean, even look at something like reality TV, which is the world that he comes from. You know, that's all fake. I mean, you know, they call it reality TV, and it's actually not. I mean, it's a very scripted, edited version of reality. Everybody knows it's, quote, rigged, and it's the, you know, it is what people watch now. It's not, and sort of persuade themselves that they're watching something that's actually happening. That's the world that Trump came out of, and it's sort of this whole idea of fake news and all the propaganda and this weird sense that you can't, that reality itself is under siege. I mean, that's all part of that. And, you know, this is what's led to, open the door to all the large-scale corruption, which we see with people like the Kochs. You know, they're much more sophisticated and strategic and systematic about the way that they do it, to the Trump administration and his friends' petty, small-time, you know, nickel-and-dime corruption, you know, just this crazy stuff. I mean, you can't believe people like Tom Price or Scott Pruitt and the nickel-and-diming they were doing, you know. So it, you know, it's pervasive. You know, we're in the era of the mesmerizing con man, I guess.
That small time corruption is sort of fascinating to me. I mean, having lived in a very small town upstate for a couple of years, and still sort of being aware of, like, you know, what the scandals end up looking like, right? It's like, this guy joins the town supervisory board, and you ultimately realize he's doing it so that he can, you know, push low interest business development loans to his buddy, right? Like, it's like that. It's, I mean, it's stuff, yeah, like this where it's like, oh, it's worth, you know, 400 grand, and they're not having to pay interest on this, and so it's that type of deal, and it's sort of, I don't know, it's fascinating to see that small-time corruption just scale up, but not really scale up. It's like, it is a different type of corruption that, and I don't know if it's worse or not, frankly, right? I mean, on some level, it's worse because you don't even need the artifice of, you know, there's no shame to it. It's
right.
It, in other ways, it's not as bad because it's just not as significant. It's very strange.
It's very weird. And, you know, what it does is just sort of, it just shows that this is a really systematic thing. It's gone from the large scale, you know, big oil companies and this, you know, which is all still exists, of course, you know, this, that level, the Wall Street corruption. It's now just kind of trickled down to, you know, this sort of base, petty, personal corruption. I mean, I don't know how much money Collins saved himself, but I remember I read something that it was something like $750,000. Now, I mean, to you and me, that's a lot of money, right? But come on, this guy's a multimillionaire. He's a board member of this pharmaceutical company, and, you know, 750 grand isn't nothing. And, you know, in the end, I don't think he personally ended up saving any money. This was all the money that was saved by his family and friends that he alerted to, you know, dump the stock. You know, come on. I mean, you know, he's doing it at the White House. They have footage of him standing on the lawn at the White House. You know, we can't read his lips, but I'm sure he's saying, sell, 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 right? You know, I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, how, you know, how petty, you know, how small do these people have to get on every level? And they are, and they're small in every way, right? I mean, look at the petty insults by the president, the get kind of really personal, creepy way they treat everyone around them, that, you know, picking fights with basketball stars. I mean, all of this stuff, it's just, we're living, it's like everything has just become so I don't know, tawdry, I guess is the word I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that's what I mean by sort of like this sort of low end, the low end of corruption, right? It's not, you know, steal a lot, they make you king, steal a little, they put you in prison. This is sort of like somewhere in between.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this is that these guys, they just figure, hey, you know, I mean, they're, it's in the sense, because they're rich, they, you know, this is pinching pennies for these people. And, you know, look at Trump. I mean, he's never left a, you know, a nickel on the sidewalk. I mean, this guy, look at his branding. Right. I mean, he was branding everything. He was branding, you know, water and steaks and, you know, anything he could slap his, you know, gold logo onto, he was doing it. And I've always thought this was interesting about Trump, because he's supposedly this big billionaire, this big developer and whatever. But, you know, from the time he went bankrupt, his casinos went bankrupt and he could no longer get loans, he was eking out, you know, multimillionaire level, he was eking out a living with these kind of small-time licensing deals. I mean, he probably made less money than Jessica Simpson on branding.
Right.
Seriously. There are people out there. I mean, branding is everything, right? Every celebrity has, you know, shoes and handbags. Probably Ivanka was doing as well as him. I mean, that you know, it was every penny he could dredge up. He was negotiating salaries on The Apprentice, you know, in $10,000 increments. And, you know, you seem to think this great billionaire, this great, huge success story with the big tower in Manhattan, and here he was. I mean, you know, it's just, it's that really kind of, I don't know, grasping sort of greed that you see at this level. That's kind of surprising, I think.
You know, it's funny because I heard a story about Stormy Daniels from someone who heard this. I don't want to say explicitly. Let's just say it was secondhand, but they were close to it. That Trump was trying to get Stormy Daniels onto The Apprentice, and he was insisting on it, and apparently the NBC executives had to write up a one-page paper that said basically, this is how much it's going to cost you. Like, it may, like, cost, because they're going to lose sponsors. It may cost, like, you know, a couple million dollars or something. And he immediately just, like, it took, like, 30 seconds for him to give up this 5 or 6 month quest to put her on the show. As soon as he saw, like, how many zeros were associated with it, he just threw it right into the garbage. And, yeah, there's a lot of nickel-diming going on here. But I don't know. I mean, I guess the point is, maybe, you know, I don't know if there is a messenger who can be believed, who comes in and says, like, you know, we can't do this. We can't do this anymore, because there's nobody I would believe. I like the policies of the Democrats, you know, broadly speaking, more than I do the Republicans. But I'm not so sure that I would believe the idea of, like, we're going to clean up corruption. Like, when you see where former Obama, you know, officials have all landed, and where, you know, guys like Howard Dean, who were, you know, darlings of the sort of the outsiders, I guess, 10, 15 years ago, going around and shilling for the MEK. I mean, it's a hard message to sell at this point, that we're going to clean up this type of corruption, isn't it?
Yeah. And it, you know, I mean, like I said, you know, compare it to reality TV and all this stuff. You know, this is a cultural problem, right? I mean, this isn't just political. This runs way deeper. There's a cynicism in the land, and for good reason. You know, nothing seems on the up and up. Where are the institutions that can tell you? The church? Oh, good luck with that. You know, look at what they're doing under the Trump era. You know, if you look at the right-wing, you know, conservative evangelicals, they've proven themselves to be entirely hypocritical about anything they believed in when it came to morality or ethics. You know, that's a goner. You know, what else? I mean, what else exists here? You know, the legal profession, the courts, you know, I don't know. I mean, I have to assume that there are, you know, that there are straight people in this world. I mean, straight meaning honest. And that, you know, they are watching this whole thing or, you know, sort of their average citizens who are sitting there going, what am I, you know, I've got kids here. What world am I, you know, bringing them up in? And somehow or another, but I don't know what the institution is that does this. I don't know where the leadership comes that does this, because they've all been proven to be corrupt. In fact, I've seen some polling that said that the military is the only institution left. I mean, look at Trump.
Great.
He's pretty much
Great.
Destroyed law enforcement. Yeah, I know. I mean, is that what we want? And I don't believe that either. Look, I mean, the military, look, ask Ike, right? I mean, that is a corrupt institution. It's just that people don't know it. And talk about a revolving door, or basically a one-way ticket to the military-industrial complex when you leave the military. So that's no guarantee. It's just that people don't, you know, I don't think they've really absorbed that the military is as corrupt as it is and has been for many decades. So I don't know where this comes from. I don't know what happens.
I mean, and we should say, like, you know, I don't know that there is. This may be a subsidiary question, but I don't know that there's any more corruption now than there's ever been, as much as people are savvier to it. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. You know, do we actually?
Well,
have
I don't. Yeah, more, I don't mean, know either. But I do know that that concept of, you know, hypocrisy is the tribute that vice pays to virtue. Some sort of clinging to at least the idea that you didn't believe that this was the right thing to do.
Yes.
There was some value in that.
Right. Right. The delusion.
The
illusion or the delusion, and the I mean, that's what norms do, right? Is that they sort of corral you in some way, I guess, that, you know, just so that you're just a little bit more hesitant about it, or that there is something healthy to the idea that people could be ashamed for doing something bad,
right,
as opposed
shame.
To it's a little difficult right now to sort of imagine, like, you know, where, you know, hopefully there's enough people out there who are not as jaded as you and I might be, and where, you know, the pitch may still work for people on some level.
Well, I mean, you've got kids, Sam. People, you know, your children, you've got to, I mean, I know that's kind of trite, because back in the Clinton era, the right-wingers all clutched their pearls. What will we tell the children? This is so terrible. And it was all phony as can be. But it's not, it is a genuinely important question. You know, what world are we leaving to kids? And
right.
What do you tell them? You know, how do you, you know, this level of cynicism is not, you know, it's just not healthy. It's extremely unhealthy. The idea that all of this stuff is just accepted. I mean, it's just, I suppose this isn't the first time. I mean, look, you know, in history that there have been civilizations that fell under these circumstances. And these are exactly the circumstances that they fell in. You know, this sort of ultimate decadence and corruption of the ruling elites and the cynicism of the masses. And, you know, it opened, somehow doors open to something different, and not always good things that are different. But nonetheless, you know, it sort of signals that something, you know, there's a decay in
yes.
society.
Well,
I've
sat down with my kids and made it very clear to them how much more they can make by foreclosing on people because of fees. As long as they get rid of the underlying, they could then also monetize the selling of the original loans to dupes. So,
and they can mesmerize them.
Right.
Perfect.
It's interesting. We just got a couple minutes left here because we got a little bit of a late start today. But so these primaries this past week, I mean, the good news is it looks increasingly like the dynamic that we've seen throughout the past year or so with special elections is continuing, right? I mean, that there just seems to be, at least on a low level, more Democratic enthusiasm to vote. And it leads one to believe that the Democrats will take the House back. And who knows in terms of the Senate, but this is what it sort of looks like, right? I mean, this is where this is going. But one of the sort of interesting dynamics is the 6 week rise and fall of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, according to the media narrative. What do you make of what's going on? Because, you know, I was struck. I was in Netroots. I know you didn't go this year, but you were one of the OG, you know, back when it was Yearly Kos. And I see some parallels between 2005 and now, in terms of, like, some parallels, some things that are not, but in terms of the energy that's happening really amongst like a generation of outsiders, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of very different factors, I think, that get overlooked. But I'm curious from your perspective, without having been there, because just going back to Netroots, I didn't see anything in particular there that made me aware of this. It just reminded me of, you know, the idea of the whole thing about Yearly Kos was literally about taking on the Democratic establishment. Mm-hmm. It was not framed in ideological terms as much as it was. I mean, there was some notion of, like, we have corporatists, you know, or a certain percentage of the party. But it was more framed about, like, they're just not aggressive enough in pursuing what they believe. And maybe there's a little bit more savvy about now about, like, maybe they don't believe it. But just what's your broad take on that?
Well, I think back then, I think in the early days, I went to all the early ones, and there was this sense for several years, I think, it was taking on the establishment. And remember, I mean, a lot of this was based on Marcos and Jerome's book, Crashing the Gate, right, which came out, right, I think, in 2005. And it was literally about that, which was just a takeover of the Democratic Party. It kind of grew out of the Dean campaign in 2004 and the blogging phenomenon that was going on then, and, you know, the Netroots, the growth of the Netroots. And that idea was just, you know, it's exactly what you said. It was taking on the establishment. It wasn't particularly ideological. It was more of a just, hey, you know, you better start fighting. And it was in a similar situation. I think this one is worse because, yep, I think Trump is actually more of an existential threat than Bush was, but it was really bad. And we were dealing with Iraq and how that war had been just, I mean, talk about a con game, right? I mean, it was like the ultimate con game. And they did it very efficiently. And in those days, they did it with the help of the media. I mean, not just the help. The media were full-on accomplices,
yep,
in the con. And so we were out there, you know, I shouldn't say we, but the Netroots were out there, you know, basically banging on the door of the Democratic Party going, you are the only tool we have to fight this. You're the only, you know, it's that or what? We're going to, you know, revolution in the streets. So, you know, that this was the mission, I think, of the group at that time. And what happened, I think, and, you know, this has probably been a necessary digression, but I'll do it anyway. 2008, Obama came along, and he was so magical as a leader that all that kind of fell away, and suddenly everybody fell in line behind the establishment because the establishment was Obama, who everybody loved. And that kind of, you know, it was an interruption in what was happening at the time, which was this sort of grassroots uprising on the left that was trying to make its way into the Democratic Party and, you know, upset the the balance in there and elect progressives to the Congress in particular, into the House, but also into the Senate. And that whole Obama phenomenon just was an interruption in that. And I don't mean that as a necessarily a criticism of him, but on a sheer political level.
Right. It co-opted a lot of the energy. It co-opted a lot of the energy.
Exactly. The leverage was gone at that point. And now it feel like it's back again in reaction to Trump. And also there's a much more, there is an ideological tinge to this after the, you know, what happened in 2007, 2008, 2009 with the crash and the foreclosures and all of that. People did wake up ideologically to, you know, what had, you know, to the consequence of not having a strong left-wing ideological faction in the Democratic Party. I will say this about what you said about the elections and how that is, you know, many more progressives are being elected. I also think that what's happening is that the Democratic Party has, they have a luxurious problem, which is that their tent is actually getting bigger. And that's because it's a majority party. I mean, the Republicans win by cheating. The Democrats actually do have more in sheer numbers. And I'm choosing to see that as a good thing. I mean, you have your Connor Lambs and this guy, Danny O'Connor, in Ohio, who, you know, came very close, and there'll be a rematch in November if the election doesn't end up going his way. You know, those are centrists. This wasn't a big centrist win. It's not like centrists are, you know, everybody's going, oh, we just want moderation and bipartisanship. That's not what's happening.
No.
But there are going to be those people in the coalition.
Of course. But that zombie of, like, the way you win an election is move to the right is not there. I mean, it is there. There is, you're going to have centrists in districts that may be conservative, but the broad sort of like prescription of you move right to is not, we don't hear that in any, from any serious quarters anymore, which I think is very healthy. There's two other things that occur to me about what happened to that energy in the Netroots. One is they ran out of money. Like there was no, and it's interesting because there's no, there, it's different now, because it used to be you'd have, let's say, 100 blogs, right? And the of that 100 blogs, 50 of those people who were important, voices in that community basically said, like, I can't afford to do this anymore. And maybe 30 of them, and maybe these numbers, I'm just throwing these numbers out, 30 of them got institutional jobs, and 20, you know, have basically been hanging on more or less, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as opposed to today, where you can hop on YouTube, usually, today it just happens that we're not streaming, but you hop on YouTube or you create a podcast and you can actually make money at it and support yourself while being a political, part of the political narrative, or, in some way shaping the narrative. That is a big change, I think. And the other is generational, because the millennial generation, just in sheer numbers, is, I think, slightly bigger, just slightly less the size of baby boomers. And it's the only real challenge to the baby boomers. In my generation, of Generation X, we were basically in the shadow of the baby boomers. We didn't have the purchasing power. We didn't have the, we weren't hired for the same jobs. We were sort of like, you know, in the shadow of those people. And we now have a generation that is big enough to actually move the cultural needle and is moving in a different way. And it's going to be interesting to find out what they do when they realize, like, oh, we're not going to get what the baby boomers got. And the baby boomers took it all. They took it all and then they burnt the fields, essentially, in many respects. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, we're seeing that, I think, in the context of the Democratic leadership. I mean, you know, and I'm, I this is, you know, not confined to specifically the age. You know, it's like who you're simpatico with, I guess, on some level. So it's an interesting time, and also a miserable one.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, you know, I'm not hopeless about this. This is difficult. This is a difficult period. A lot to do with what we talked about earlier in the program, this sort of, you know, massive sense of cynicism that sort of runs through everything, mistrust and confusion and, you know, this unreality, I guess. You know, they call it, you know, epistemological relativism, you know, everything just sort of seeming like you can't really grasp, there's right. no common sense of what's going on. However, within that, obviously, what we also just described was this new generation coming up with what seems to be, you know, a strong commitment to, you know, positive, progressive politics.
Yep.
I mean, that's the opposite side of the coin, right? I mean, that's where, and they have to, you know, really work hard to cling to reality. And it will get harder, as you know, you're older than they are, and I'm way older than they are. You know, life intrudes, and sometimes, you know, you get in there, you start, you know, trying to figure things out, you know, make a living, you know, raise your kids, do things like that. You know, all of this the balance starts to get out of kilter.
Yep.
And they have challenges ahead. You know, they do. It's you know, I was an idealist too when I was young. So were you, and so is everybody. So I just hope they stick with it, because right, it's never been more important. I don't think.
Digby, Heather Parton, thank you so much for your time today. Always, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Have a great weekend.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Matt Chrisman will make his way to the dais, and we will commence with the program. All right, be right back after this break.
Nest up in the autumn branches, built from nothing but high hopes and thin air. He collected up some baby blasted mothers. They took their chances, and for a while they lived quite happily up there. He came from New York City, man, but he couldn't take the pace, and thought it was like a dog-eat-dog world. And he went to San Francisco, spent a year in outer space with a sweet little San Franciscan girl. I can hear my mother wailing and a whole lot of scraping of chairs. I don't know what it is, but there's definitely something going on upstairs. He had to get out of there in San Francisco. Well, I don't know. Too much pride. And all my pride.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. We are having a little bit of technical difficulties today, but nothing too major. Folks, I'd like to welcome to the show. Is this the first time you've been on the program?
Yes.
That's ridiculous. Matt Chrisman from Chapo Trap House is here. Apparently you guys have a new book.
Yes, we do. Virgil is sending us all on the rounds wherever we can go to talk about it.
Is that what, is that the way it works? Is that the dynamic where Virgil, you know what, we somebody help him with his no, just you can push the whole thing, will go up like this. Yeah, just like that.
There you go. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
That's
it.
There he is. Doesn't look comfortable.
Yeah.
All right, so you were saying that Virgil sends you guys around?
Is, yeah, he's the taskmaster there. That's his job.
He's turning you out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I go where he sends me.
And that's, and then he sent you here today?
Yes, he did.
And he didn't give you a book?
I have a book. I forgot to bring it because I'm not the natural salesman that he is.
You
might as well be going around in a straw boater.
Is it a passive aggressive move against him to not bring the book? Or
I honestly just didn't think of it. I don't have the native salesmanship that he does.
He's going to beat you with a cane later and make you sing the Chapo theme song like they did in Gung Ho.
Yeah, I will wear ribbons of shame.
From a Jordan Peterson perspective, there's something going on with your subconscious chaos.
All right. Well, all right. So fair enough. And what is the name of the book?
The book is The Chapo Guide to Revolution, A Manifesto Against Logic, Facts, and Reason.
All right. And there we go. And so and that's available at fine booksellers everywhere? Or?
Starting August 21st. Available for pre-order now. Yeah.
Wait, it's only in pre-order?
Yeah.
Jeez, you guys are good. It really does.
It's all Virgil.
I felt like the book's been out for like months.
Of course. That was the whole point.
Wow.
To get everyone so sick of it that when it finally came out, no one would care.
That's, wow, what a letdown it's going to be when the book actually comes out.
Yeah.
Whose decision was it to put it out the week, like the least media saturated week probably of the year?
I don't know. I know it was supposed to come out like, originally it was going to be in the fall and they pushed it up. I guess they just wanted to,
capture the wave
of
excitement in late August?
Yeah. It's hot. What else are you going to do? Read a book.
I guess there you go. Beach reading for the last week of beach season.
Exactly.
Well, all right. Fair enough. And so I've been following you a little bit recently on Twitter, Matt. And,
oh, yeah?
Yeah. And apparently you're really into this whole new bringing back asbestos thing.
That's, well, I mean, I just, I'm packing myself on the back because that's one of my predictions that came true. But with these things, I often forget that I said them until someone points them out. But right after the...
Oh, right. That was in 2016.
Yeah.
I like rickets.
Yeah.
Sorry. Read the list.
Which one's going to come true next?
All right. Well, let's hear... Matt, why don't you read them off? Things that will return during the Trump years.
Lawn darts, original recipe Four Loko, asbestos, fen-fen, rickets, polio, and cholera.
And we have, at the very least, have asbestos.
Yeah.
I think fen-fen is...
Fen-fen is
I mean, the FDA is going to be gutted, and so, it'll be the Wild West all over again. Yeah. Just straight methamphetamine for diets, that kind of thing.
I thought lawn darts were always...
We should check Mar-a-Lago to see what's going on with lawn darts down there.
I heard, actually, that lawn darts have been made available again, in like last year. They're modified, so they're not the old... big metal end, but
people may not know that they were taken off the market because they could actually hurt somebody.
Yeah,
I've never heard of this.
It was a fun thing you did on your lawn where you threw a giant spike at a target.
They look like badminton birdies, but instead of like a rubber tip, it had a dagger on the end.
It was a giant metal
was
point.
It like a body count to him or...
Yeah, well, apparently...
Oh, yeah, no, there were significant injuries.
They
javelin darts. Legs. Like, geez. Well, if they're going to... I'm excited for Four Loko. Like, if they're going to make us live in this late capitalist hell world, we might as well get to have all four of the Lokos, right?
Yeah, I'm not happy with the two Lokos that we're only allowed now.
That reminds me of what was that, the 70s Dan Aykroyd thing on SNL where he would like he was like a toy salesman.
Erwin Mainway.
Yeah, and he would be and it would be like a spacesuit, but it would just be like a plastic bag with a rubber band. And he'd just be like, here's what happens. You get it for your young kid. He's going to have a great time. You just stuff the bag over his head.
Here it is, Teddy Chainsaw Bear.
Yeah, Teddy Chainsaw Bear.
Well, this is the libertarian paradise, right? Where we're going to unshackle the American ingenuity by taking the yoke of oppressive consumer safety and workplace laws and allow business to flourish. All right, let me ask you this, Matt. So what is your take on what happened this week in terms of these primaries? Do you think there's much to be thinking about or what?
I think that it's, as they always used to say about a lot of things, when people didn't want to make a definitive conclusion, too early to tell. I honestly think that that's the case. I feel like anybody trying to draw definitive conclusions from a handful of primary races this early in electoral landscape that was fundamentally transformed only 2 years ago, really, by the Trump election, is just I think doomed to failure just because of how early everything is. I think we can't really tell yet because these forces are still being marshaled.
It's interesting because I think to a certain extent, the implications of AOC's win have been, you know, we're overblown in terms of a national story, mostly because she's an incredibly talented politician, I think. And she became some type of signal for something I think larger that is happening, but that happens a lot slower. And the opportunity for people, you know, she won a primary that 20,000 some odd people voted in, and it was a huge surprise. But nobody was going around saying that David Brat was like the leader of a new, you know, like was going to. Exactly. As Michael's like looking like into the like who's David Brat?
No, I remember. I thought some they tried to leverage him.
It was a huge upset in the thing.
No, they used
And David Brat's not the politician that AOC is.
No, he is not.
And but I think that whatever's happening that she signifies is scaring people enough that they really think that if they undercut her in particular, that it's all going to go away. I have a feeling that that's not the case.
Well, no, because they view politics purely through the lens of personality. So this person winning this race, that makes them sort of the focus point of it. And then if that freaks you out, then your strategy is to take her out specifically. And that imagining that that will therefore dissipate all of the forces that led to her winning in the first place.
On some level, that is, though, there's a lot of that on the right. Ben Shapiro. Let's talk about Ben Shapiro, apparently. So Ben Shapiro, I don't know if you saw this. Ben Shapiro has decided that he is going to make an issue. Did we play the original video of Ben Shapiro challenging AOC to a debate?
It was a tweet, but he
had a video.
Oh, I didn't see this.
Where he said, I will pay $10,000 to your campaign if you debate with me. Now, that's illegal.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's why Dinesh D'Souza went to prison, is that, you know, to pay $10,000, you would have to actually, like, he would give it to his wife.
Right.
Or he would give it to his sister.
You know, his wife's a doctor.
Cap.
Just FYI.
Heard his wife's
a hot
doctor.
Have you heard that his wife is a doctor?
Hot doctor, excuse me.
I heard all the money.
As hot as his sister.
All the money Sheldon Adelson gives out, it's actually he's challenging people to debates, and then they beat him, and he gives them the money.
Sheldon, I lost another debate on regulations.
So he could have a PAC. He could spend the money on the outside. He could give $10,000 to the PAC, but he can't give $10,000. And this is, incidentally, this is the philosophical and intellectual leader of the new conservative movement.
I take back
doesn't
what I
know
said yesterday.
The fundamental basics of campaign finance. But so he offered $10,000 to debate her. I'm not sure on what. And here is the video.
Hi, I really wanted to make just a direct appeal to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the future of the Democratic Party, according to Tom Perez, head of the DNC. Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, I'm really excited that you've been elevated to that position, and I would love to have a real conversation with you about the issues. You've noted you think Republicans are afraid to debate you or talk to you or discuss the issues with you. Not only am I eager to discuss the issues with you, I'm willing to offer $10,000 to your campaign today for you to come on our Sunday special, and we can have an hour-long conversation about all the topics under the sun, really probe your belief system. And frankly, if you want to raise charity and we'll do it as a debate, we can do that too. However you want to do it, I am more than willing to talk to you. I would love to have this conversation. So let's make this happen. Let's make America a more civil and interesting place. Let's do this thing.
Now, it's sort of fascinating. It would never occur to me to debate a Republican politician. I would, but it just wouldn't occur to me that, like, you know, like when Dave Brat won, I wasn't like, I want to debate David Brat. And these guys are business people. They're smart about that, right? I mean, you know, he knows that she's not going to debate him. She should debate a Republican politician. Like, what, where? So he's been going on and on about this. No one's, she's not paying attention to him. And then we see this. She writes, just like catcalling, I don't owe a response to an unsolicited request from men with bad intentions. Also like catcalling, can we see what else she says there? For some reason, they feel what? All right. Well,
sorry, folks,
nevertheless, she says
she's implying they feel entitled to the response, basically, which he does.
He does. But he responds with, discussion and debate are not bad intentions. Now, of course, Ben Shapiro, if it was so obvious, he wouldn't have had to offer $10,000, right?
It's amazing the way he has been able to launder his reputation as like this little like culture warrior wind up doll of the Bush years just through this type of verbiage.
Yeah. And then he says amazing. Slandering someone as a sexist catcaller without reason or evidence does demonstrate cowardice and bad intent, however.
Mm. Yeah, let's make it about that.
Mm. Now, Matt, you do a lot of reading, my understanding is. Was she slandering him as a sexist catcaller?
Well, I mean, she was doing a comparison. She was comparing it to catcalling in the specific sense that it's sort of a demand for attention, and it's sort of an unearned expectation of a response. And by definition, it's not saying it is catcalling. It's saying it's like it. That's what the word like means.
There you go. Now, maybe you and Ben Shapiro should have a debate on the English language and the idea of metaphors or
I would honestly rather get a root canal without anesthetic than talk to them for a minute of my life.
And she said there also like catcalling, for some reason they feel entitled to one being a response. And then his next response is but sure, go what you here. Matt, why don't you read it?
But sure, go with the Orthodox Jew.
Oh, wait,
who
you
got to
do the quote. You
got to
do the quote.
Oh, quote.
Quote.
The Orthodox Jew who has never catcalled a woman in his life is actually a sexist catcaller for asking for a discussion or debate. I'm sure your media sycophants will eat it up.
Now,
talk about glass houses, the aggrievement. With actually.
Well, first off, let's start with the actually, since he capitalized it. What do you make out of that?
Well, he's just saying he's calling her anti-Semitic, kind of, I guess. I don't know why he had to throw Orthodox Jew in there. So they don't catcall people or they're not sexist?
But what's the actually?
As someone who used to live in a Hasidic neighborhood, I'm going to debunk that right now. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
All right, but what is the actually? That's not how
spelling
we spell
it wrong.
Yeah.
That's just Reddit crap. That's just epic win.
Oh, is that
it's
really?
Like when you spell the with the E in the middle, like te. It's just more evidence that he's an insufferable internet nerd.
Okay, and so the Orthodox Jew has never catcalled. I'm not sure what the Orthodox Jew has about it, but I guess he feels he's super pious.
Yeah. How dare you think I would ever catcall you?
Because Orthodox Jews never do anything that is not that is
let
in any
me
way
holler
sexist.
At you, bitch.
Yeah, they definitely right? never hang out at Duff's Metal Bar in Williamsburg and try to get my friends to hook up with them in
Why
the bathroom.
Why are you blowing up their spots like that?
Orthodox Jews, Orthodox, like religious fundamentalists, never ever think that they are owed something by women.
Right.
That never happens Correct. With male fundamentalist members of any religion.
That's why women wear burqas in Saudi, so they're not obligated to debate.
Right. They never demand that, like, maybe, like, now.
Let me holler at you. Yo, Ma, let me talk to you for a second.
Nice ankles.
Nice ankles. That's the finest wig I've ever seen. Where are you at?
This is it's
smile for me, Ma.
So Shapiro seems to be hurting a little bit, because I think if you need two tweets to respond to her shutdown of you, you're in trouble, right?
Well, it's just, I mean, like you said, I don't think he had any expectation she would actually do it. What this does is it gives him a chance to be a victim, which is this is the only move that you've got when you're in his position.
Well that's what they
it
all
it also
love to
elevates
be.
Him into having a some type of, like, back and forth. And she specifically did not respond to him, but rather to someone else who was calling, you know, who's calling it out. Guys, that is, at this point, like, they're Matt and Brendan now are literally taping a headphone to an iPhone to try and record. It's just not happening today. We've at one point, you got to give up the ghost.
Thanks for effort, though.
Yes. But it's getting a little bit distracting to see, right, like, the construction going on.
What were you just talking about?
What we were just talking about how the Orthodox Jew has now elevated himself on the same level as Ocasio-Cortez.
I like right. how it's That's the like, Orthodox Jew. I like
the
how
one.
We took his little sort of hint of anti-Semitism. We're like, yeah, what's wrong
the
with
one
that?
Orthodox Jew who's never catcalled a woman in his life. Oh, what I was going to say was, this is like a textbook rule or tip for, like, how to get more famous, is you pick a fight with someone more famous than you. That's how it works on Twitter, and that is what he's doing now.
Yeah, it's like rap beef.
There you go.
He's just doing a rap.
You got to punch up, you know.
I've told this story about Michael Ian Black, right? He built his whole, I think, Facebook page based upon a fight with David Sedaris that David Sedaris had no idea he was engaged in. And apparently the story is, like, Sedaris was giving a reading out in, like, San Francisco at one point, and someone was like, what is going on with this fight with Michael Ian Black? And he's like, I have no idea who that guy is. And then Michael Ian Black did the same thing with LeVar Burton on Twitter.
LeVar Burton?
And
Reading Rainbow Man?
LeVar Burton had no idea what was going on. But Michael, and then it just, like, he got, I don't know, almost 1.5 million followers from it. So there you go.
Well, Beck, I don't know if this is going to elevate his importance further, but I kind of liked what you said about the root canal, Matt. Maybe we could get, like, a hashtag going. Like, I would rather do this horrible thing than ever talk to that little sophist twerp who's monetizing it on YouTube.
I would debate him for free. You wouldn't even have to pay $10,000 to debate me. I would do it for free.
Sam's like, I will meet you at a Denny's
parking lot. I will do it for free. And this reformed Jew, this reformed Jew will debate you.
Hey, Ben, let me holler at you.
Yes.
Hey, Ma.
We can sit down for an hour on a Sunday.
You could do battle in her place.
We're not going to work. Sundown on Friday. All right.
Come on. Let's do this thing.
Yeah.
That's how you have to end it.
All right. Let's. You've been following this Chris Collins story?
A little bit. I guess this guy's a crook.
He's a crook?
I guess just a dumb one, because, like, presumably every one of them is. I just assume that they're all doing deeply illegal stuff all the time. And he's just dumb enough to get caught.
This is a flashback to December 2017. And this is a funny moment where Stephanie Ruhle is talking about how the carried interest loophole somehow found its way into the GOP tax bill. The carried interest loophole is the one which allows hedge fund managers working in service of investing their clients' money is perceived, and the fees they get are perceived to be, because they're based on commission, ostensibly, their own capital gains. And so they're taxed at a rate that's, 20-some-odd percent less, more or less, than it otherwise would be. And somehow it got back into the GOP tax bill. Here's Chris Collins back in December of 2017 explaining how that happened.
President Trump, Steve Mnuchin, Gary Cohn on the campaign trail and since in office said carried interest will without a doubt be taken out. It's one of the things that hurt Mitt Romney when he was running because he came from the private equity industry. Carried interest is still in there. So
well,
private
we did
equity,
change the
hold
holding
on, sir.
Period.
Hold on, sir. So you change it for hedge fund managers, not for private equity, the guys who truly benefit from it. And guess what? They always have a longer than 3-year holding period. They buy companies just like real estate firms do. So they're being taxed higher at a higher rate, like it's investment income, than New York City firefighters and police officers. Just this morning on with Axios, Gary Cohn said the White House tried 25 times to get carried interest taken out, and the Hill fought it. By the Hill fighting it, that means that there are special interest groups pushing the buttons. Who supports, make the argument for me why carried interest should be in there? Because the White House just said, we wanted it out. Congress wants it in.
Oh, I can't make that argument. I advocated strongly to remove the carried interest.
Then who wanted it in? You voted yes.
Well, it came through our Ways and Means Committee. That's where our tax bill was debated and changed. All I can say is we can agree to disagree on things, and I disagreed with keeping that in there, and it did stay, but this is a great bill, so if it's, you can't ever let perfect be the enemy of good.
He didn't disagree with anybody. He just disagreed with the idea.
It was the tax fairies. They got into the house and sprinkled it all over the bill.
I'm finding the synchronized phone calls that literally sort of like enacted the crime in real time to be a lot less surprising after watching that clip. That
right.
Not a bright guy.
Well, totally bright.
Yeah.
He managed to, you know, convince the host of the show that there was some invisible forces who he disagreed with who were putting it in.
A lot of people are
couldn't.
Saying it's
definitely. How do you stop that? It's like fighting a ghost.
Yeah. It's like if every one of them says it wasn't me, what are you going to do?
Well, who's going to
take that,
it
like
out?
The Shaggy
I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to touch it. I don't want to. I'm not going to touch it. It's just going to, let's see if it falls out by itself.
Agree to disagree is such a powerful phrase.
Yes. It is like, it's like calling someone a racist.
Well, agree to disagree.
What can you say to that?
It ends the conversation. You can't have any more conversation. We agree to disagree.
It's kind of weird, though, when somebody says agree to disagree, but one of them is charged with writing the laws of the country and the other person isn't. It's
right.
Like, look, I actually have the power to make something happen. You are just mad about it, but look, it's just a disagreement. My version of it gets to become reality. And you get
you
to be
get
annoyed
to be upset.
About it.
Yeah.
Your
and
version
we'll just
is
agree.
An annoying question. It's I like, was in the room writing the legislation.
It just means agree not to be mad at me.
Yeah, it's like agree to let me fuck you over.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like can't if we can't get along just because I put that carried interest loophole in there, then can anybody?
Yeah, it's like you're pretty petty and small-minded if you can't get over something that small.
Don't you want global warming to be solved? Well, if we can't just walk away from this, do we have any chance to save the planet? I don't think so.
I think David Axelrod would agree with that sentiment.
Collins was pretty bold in his... What do you make of something like that? Like, why is a guy who's got that much money that freaked out? Was he just worried about saving his son?
Yeah, presumably, yeah. I mean, that's like they have this whole network of sycophants and nepotism cases around them that they have to support, you know. So presumably, like, they don't want to have to take care of them in their dotage. So
right. I don't want you living in one of my four houses.
Exactly. So they got to – it's giving them the tools they need to succeed on their own.
It's a hand up.
Not a hand down. Exactly.
Oh, let's play this one here. This is another one, the latest installment.
You give a son a fish, but if you bring a son in on an insider trading.
That's right. He learns to engage in corrupt practices on his own.
Right.
And then you can be at arm's length and not have to get sent to jail. This is the latest iteration, the latest installment of Isn't This Sweet? and how horrific that there's even an opportunity for this to happen. This story comes out of Alabama. There's a teacher, apparently teaches at a school. She was spending hours on the bus every day to get to work. And one of the, her, I guess, presumably the parents of one of her students found out. She gave the teacher a present. Here's a clip of this teacher, we don't know her name, getting a car from a parent. The teacher's about to get a life-changing present from one of the parents of the student. There it is. She's crying.
You're really serious. I'm serious. Oh, my gosh.
We don't want you to have to catch the bus.
Businesswoman and mom, Courtney Allade, said this is the definition of success. Adele.
Oh, my gosh. My God, I cannot believe this. Oh, my gosh.
And she wrote, when you ask me to define success, this is my response. Give to those without expectations. Now, this is a sweet moment. It's a nice thing for her to do. But
it's a total indictment of our society in every way, shape, and form.
It's a total indictment of our society. I mean, Matt, do you even think teachers deserve cars?
I mean, I don't think anybody deserves a car. Let's start walking again, people. I think this is fine because it just shows that all we need to do, anybody who's struggling, anybody who's falling behind in their life, you just need to get a wealthier patron to sort of approve of you and your antics. And then they will, you know, like medieval Florence or something, they'll be your patron and, you know, pay you to do what you want. And that's the future.
I like your teaching antics.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's more and more of this. And I think like, I get the sense that the editors are in newsrooms saying like, we've got to promote these like feel good stories. Like, you know,
there was when are they going to stop? They're never going to realize
where a cop doesn't just, you know, shoot somebody, but takes a homeless person and buys them a toothbrush or something, you know, like this is like, you know, to counteract the Trump thing. But
after
it also, it doesn't seem like there's any sense of like the, even the mom is like, this is outrageous. Like she, you know, she has this platform to say like, this is outrageous. It shouldn't be the case that the kid, the person who teaches my kid doesn't have an ability to get to school every day.
These are feel bad stories. The news is never going to realize that because they are corporate owned media that toes the line of neoliberalism where it's like, oh, it's our responsibility to take these things upon ourselves. This is just the way things are, right? Teacher pay is just low. That's a force of fucking nature. Like, I wrote an op-ed about this a few months ago when an 11-year-old girl, do you remember this story? She set up a lemonade stand to pay for her mom's kidney and pancreas transplant.
Inspiring.
Everyone's like, oh my God, that's so heartwarming. Like, no, what the fuck? This is terrible.
Do you recall there was a reality show that we talked about, I want to say a year ago or so. I don't remember the name of it. And I think it did get pulled.
Not the Undercover Boss.
No.
The one about the
loans. It was literally something about people competing for like some type of very base. What? It was about survival. It was some type of like taking a show where you weren't getting like riches or excess, but it was like taking people in really dire situations and having them sort of like get into a position to like get out of debt or something.
Right. And it was framed. Who was more morally,
who was more morally upright to get outside of a,
who deserved
precisely.
Who deserved,
and it was the,
who deserved their,
and
their
it was like a Tony, and it was a Tony Robbins seminar ad. It was framed as like, this is what I learned about myself, this sort of thing.
It's really not that many steps from there to the show in Sorry to Bother You, which is like, what, I got the shit kicked out of me?
Yeah.
Right.
It's basic. It's practically the same thing.
But the thing that we are missing, though, too,
I got the
about
shit kicked in, and I learned a lesson.
The thing that we're missing about this is that now she's going to be able to drive Uber to subsidize her her teaching salary. So
give a teacher a car, she eats for a day. Teach a teacher to drive a car, and she can Uber drive for life to subsidize her teaching habit.
There you go.
How many teachers have you met driving in one of those car services? I've met several.
In New York City?
A couple.
I met one in Denver.
I met one. Two, actually.
I don't use them. I don't use them as much as you do.
I use them all the time.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Patreon.com/TVS.
Oh, should we do the Pence Space Force thing? Are you excited about Space Force?
I'm jacked. I'm so psyched for Space Force. I love these kind of things that they do. It's my favorite part of the whole Trump thing.
Would you sign up for it? Would you sign up for Space Force?
Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen? You mean what? Like, there's nobody out there. You know, you're not going to get fragged. You're not gonna be traumatized for life by, you know, machine gunning a bunch of people at a checkpoint or something. There's nobody out there, you know.
It's gonna be just like playing like asteroids in real life.
Yeah, you just get to float around. I guess it's just like being an astronaut with a gun, and everything's more fun if you have a firearm involved.
All right, here is Mike Pence, and he's already looking like he's sad. He's already like delivers it. His voice is saying excited about Space Force. His face looks like
Wallace and Gromit.
It looks like one of the rockets has already blown up accidentally.
Yeah, every picture of Pence looks like the words coming out of his mouth are going to be, "I'm sorry, it was malignant."
Exactly. Here is Mike Pence announcing Space Force.
Our adversaries have transformed space into a warfighting domain.
How?
Already.
Wait, really?
And the United States will not shrink from this challenge.
Pause it. Is it possible they've been watching like a movie, like they like watched Independence Day?
Maybe they don't know what illegal alien means. Maybe they think that means literal space people.
Have the Chinese? What's going on? Have the Chinese? Are they sending down killer rays to us or what?
Pence thought Mass Effect was body cam footage.
All right,
maybe they discovered a tract on Posadism and thought that was really going to happen when the space comrades come and bring us communism.
They have to defend us against space communism.
Here we go. He looks pretty dour.
It's serious business.
Under President Trump's leadership, we will meet it head on to defend our nation and build a peaceful future here on Earth.
By weaponizing space.
Hold on, wait a second. This guy, can he not read? I don't think I've ever seen him deliver a formal speech before.
Build a peaceful future.
It feels like he's having real problems with a teleprompter.
Build a peaceful future by strapping bazookas to the International Space Station.
But
that sounds like a Newt Gingrich policy paper.
He's got that George Bush thing, too, where he's like got to bounce a little bit so he can read.
Trump's leadership, we will meet it head on to defend our nation and build a peaceful future here on Earth and in space. America will always seek peace in space as on the Earth, but history proves that peace only comes through strength.
Who's giving him?
He keeps adding space. It's like, we're going to have peace on Earth. It's like, I understand that. There's a bunch of humans here. They fight over resources and ideologies and stuff. And in space, it's just a bunch of, it's a vacuum. It's already incredibly peaceful. You don't have to do anything to make space more peaceful than it is. It could not be more peaceful.
It is the definition of peace. You can't even hear anybody scream in space,
yeah.
Right? He also, his delivery is such, it feels like David Mamet has been coaching him on delivering, you know, those, like, they all have that thing where they put their commas in a different place.
Yeah, weird spacing and pauses, yeah.
We'll always seek peace in space as on the Earth, but history
Congratulations, we did it.
That peace only comes through strength.
No. Peace comes from it being a giant vacuum. That's where the peace comes from.
Will be that strength.
You don't need to show a force to asteroids.
Scaring vacuum.
I guess going back to 2011, NASA was banned by Congress from using funds to host Chinese visitors at NASA facilities.
Is that right?
And in 2013, Congress passed legislation barring Chinese nationals from entering NASA facilities without a waiver from NASA.
There you go.
So I think we've already been on it.
Well, the fact that they want this to be publicly funded as opposed to literally everything else the government does means maybe they don't trust Elon Musk as much as I thought they might.
This,
there's money to be made.
Exactly. The $500 million SS Baron Trump Gundam has exploded on the way.
Right. There you go.
Yeah. We've had we've had a program like this, right, in the 90s. Do you want to play that clip that we had from the 90s? Here we go. We got one more clip from the 90s where this where they had made an earlier announcement about this. Of course, it was in 3x4. Go ahead.
Yet. Thank you very much. We have an announcement to make on July 4th of this year. America will blow up the moon. We have the technology. The time is now. Science can wait no longer. Children are our future. America can, should, must, and will blow up the moon. Yes, and we'll be doing it during a full moon, so we make sure we get it all.
Blowing up the moon fever.
There we go.
God, and you know this only happened because Trump just got it in his head, the idea for it.
From what?
Do you think that's what it was? Or do you think that somebody goes to him and says, like, I've got, I built a bunch of, like, extra suits and we need, like, I, like, the VA thing to me seems like the model about this, of this administration, where you've got three guys who have nothing to do with the VA. They're not veterans. They just have products they want to sell to the VA. And so they start making massive wholesale changes to the largest entity. I mean, it's a $200 billion entity. Aside from probably the military itself, the VA involves every aspect of our government, right? Like insurance, delivery of health care, a myriad of different things. And these guys just step in and make large, broad policy changes based upon the fact that they just want to enrich themselves. I feel like there's somebody out there who is selling, you know, like,
Space bazookas?
We made too many space bazookas, so what do you say?
But that's just it. Is that there aren't, I guess the idea is give us money and we'll build one for you. It'll be like the F-35 or something.
There is a principle. Like, this is primitive accumulation, right? Like, it's a new commons to privatize.
But there's nothing up there.
You can build things up there. You can put missiles out there. You can do whatever. I mean, in the 80s, what about, does this relate to Star Wars, Sam?
But that's what I don't understand.
I don't know.
Nobody has explained to me what it is. Like, it just sounds like NASA is too gay because they don't have guns. And so we want a macho NASA. We want, it's just like NASA. They do the same thing. They go into space. They create, they do space exploration and they build space stations, but they do it with like an AR-15 strapped to their back. I mean, what is it?
It is making space a force instead of just a thing.
But that's just it. It's just, that's why I kind of think that it started as just Trump's dying brain being like, space, why aren't there guns? Why isn't it cool? Why isn't it strong? Why isn't it forceful? Because NASA is just a bunch of nerds. Oh, we're going to find out about what happens to rocks when they have zero gravity. Like, tell me, I'm falling asleep. Tell me about how you went out and you, like, no-scoped a piece of debris with a laser gun or something like that.
Do we even know? I mean, have they like issued like what it's going to consist of? Like, are there going to be personnel, or is it just going to be ships, or is it just we're firing
lasers?
That's
what I don't understand. That's what I don't know. I mean, they're not you're not, presumably they're not like, hey, join the Space Force. I mean, that's kind of the pitch they're making, but that can't be the case of, like, you know, some high school graduate is going to wander into the recruiting station in his local mall.
But, dude.
And be like, hey, you want to go to the Space Force?
Where are they going to put the labels?
Because the people...
Like, what are the labels going to go on? Somebody's uniform that... What does that person with the uniform do?
Because everybody who goes to space now has, like, 15 master's degrees. They're all scientists. They're not going to just take kids... The kids who, like, sign up to get a communications degree and go to Afghanistan, they're not going to put them in space.
Well, not with that attitude. I think it's just going to be like the movie
Soft
Starship
bigotry of low
Troopers.
Expectations over here.
Just it
everything
like
works out great.
You can't do, like, 2 weeks. You can't do 6 weeks of boot camp and then go to space the way you can go get deployed to land
war because it's land. It's a lot easier. There's gravity here.
The Not upside. Now. Okay. On the other hand, you need far less guys to train to win the battle.
That's
right?
True, because there's literally nobody else up there. There's you said so one guy.
He had sent 15 people. It's like a massive force.
Send one guy with a freaking 38, and he's king of space. He's the warlord, god king of space.
Got to take the victories where you get them.
Why are you never feeding been, ideas?
To my knowledge, there's never been a gun in space other than in the film Armageddon. But so if a guy just went out there with like a sidearm, one guy, he's the king of space. Because well, who's up there? There's like 12 Russians or something at the International right. Space Station. And I think that's basically it. I don't even think China has people in orbit right now.
Not right now.
So it's just like you're going to go to the International Space Station and just like... like rob them? What are you gonna do? I mean, put them in space jail.
So apparently, this goes back in 1992. There was a Russian space force, which is where this
is. That right?
I'm not even bullshitting.
That
you.
Is that and sounds
it,
like the
and it focused on aerospace warnings, air sovereignty, and protection for Russia. I don't know. It sounded like the Air Force that
yeah,
goes
air,
up higher.
Yeah, it's there's the yeah. thing about space is no air. So that part at least is not relevant to the space force.
Why are you such a pedant? Just go with the branding.
Maybe they're just trying to keep him busy so he doesn't fuck their shit up while they're trying to win the Monopoly game.
Was that a Russian space force or a Soviet Union space force?
Cause no, Russians, 1992. It's post-Soviet okay. Union. And then it stopped in 97, reassumed 2001, and exists today.
I would imagine.
Don't tell the resistance that, because now they're going to be like, "Oh, we need a space force. Russians have a space force. We need one."
Well,
I understand that Trump. I know Trump said this, but sometimes we have to use his ideas.
The training of the space force is probably guys who are learning. Like they'll have their own martial arts, which involves just like unplugging things.
Yeah. Just pull someone's air tube out. You're done.
And watching Inception.
Right. It's just sort of like grabbing. You got to do the grab move to pull the air hose.
The only like significant thing, and I don't know how much, I don't think this is factored into the decision, but was that we have standards or history of not wanting to militarize space and agreements maybe even to that effect. And this sort of is like,
yeah, blah, blah,
who cares?
Blah.
Yeah,
who cares?
Exactly.
Space Force. but no, I honestly, yeah, I think there's something to the idea of just keeping him busy and... just as a politics angle, it is a great way to keep your hooting swine fans engaged. You have to keep giving them new things, or else right. they'll get distracted and they'll like move on or stop getting interested. Which is the one thing that I think is going to really hurt the blue wave more, even as much as something like gerrymandering and vote suppression. Is that unlike previous presidents, Trump I think is unique in his ability to maintain engagement with his supporters. Because what happens every single time, it's like a law of gravity. You win an election, a presidential election, your supporters kind of lose interest. They won. They kind of kick back. It happened with Obama. It happened with Clinton, even with Reagan. And with Trump, he's keeping them engaged by throwing out new stuff all the time. New stuff to get excited about or angry about. And like, hey, that thing with the Space Force, the patches, pick one. You are involved.
Right.
It's like interactive. It's right. It's a fun thing, and so you get to go to the rally because he has a rally somewhere. I mean, he probably has a rally where you live, within the 2 weeks, considering how much he moves around. You can go to the rally. You can pick out your favorite Space Force logo. You have an engagement.
It's like but fucking American they're gonna come Idol.
Out, but do you think they're going to come out and vote for a Republican congressman? Like I
well,
don't.
That is the problem.
Obama
that,
had that same problem too. Like,
yeah.
People liked him, but none of that.
And Trump has specifically sort of positioned himself against traditional Washington, and so that will hurt it. But I mean, if he works hard enough, and this is going to be hard for him because his ego doesn't really. There was that famous moment where he was talking.
It's
about
important.
Getting him out. He's like, it's as important. It's as important as voting in 2016. I don't know who wrote that. It's not as important as that.
Exactly. I don't think he...
That was a great moment.
I don't think he could possibly bring himself to make it about the candidate in any real
right.
way.
Yeah. I guess it's just you hope that it has a spillover effect. You hope that just you get them riled. They're imagining their idiot son in space with a firearm. It's like he's out of my basement and he's floating around Alpha Centauri lasering lizard people.
I mean, I think that's true. I think he has not
to space.
Yeah.
He doesn't have scope in terms of his audience. Like it's not expanding.
No.
In fact, I think there's some evidence that it may be contracting a little bit, but it's deepening.
Oh, God, yes.
Right?
That same poll that showed that like one in five Trump supporters are souring on him, the other four like it more than when they voted for
right.
him.
Right.
Place Obamacare. But now that's changed. Today, through the Sharper image, you can enjoy the world's greatest steaks in your own home. With family, friends, anytime, and you're going to finally have the affordability they need and the quality they deserve at a lower price. Trump.
What was Sharper Image?
Delicious. It was a GeeGog restaurant. Or it was a GeeGog store.
No, yeah.
It was sort of like a SkyMall catalog, but a real place.
Is it gone now?
Yeah, they're gone.
Wow, I haven't been to the mall in a while.
It was a SkyMall.
That's one of my all-time favorite things for the 2016 campaign was... It was after one of the primaries that he won, and people were getting the Republicans were finally realizing this guy might win, and so they were all hands on deck, and so they were going after him for failing businesses. Be like, well, everyone thinks he's a good businessman. We're going to point out how many of his businesses failed. There's no more Trump steaks. There's no more Trump water. And he had a press conference, and he wheeled out a bunch of steaks. And said, "These are the Trump steaks. They're right here, folks." And it's just like that wasn't a debatable proposition. That yeah. like they factually don't exist. You can't buy them. But he had some that somebody had just gone to a grocery store and bought and brought to the thing. And he's like, "No, wait, what are you talking about? There's no Trump steaks. They're right here." That was amazing, and that really showed.
I got fooled by that. I thought there were still Trump steaks.
Yeah, no, there's no more Trump steaks. No, but he bought some at a Kroger and brought them into the store. Brought them in. And says, "If you want some, you can buy them later." It's like, yeah, that's the new retail market. Is you literally come up to the presidential candidate and give him money in exchange for some steaks that he brings around with him on a cart.
You probably actually could. I have a quick question about that, though. Do you think that when they emphasized that, I get that they were attacking his core, you know, selling
competency,
point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, I feel like that was another area where a lot of people could say, like, hey, like, I tried to start, like, a little business.
Honestly,
it didn't work out. Like, what's necessarily wrong with that? He had success in other areas.
I think they take it, yeah, it's persistence because he kept going after failing. But the other one is, what are they saying? They're saying this. They're saying words. A politician is saying words. And the words are, this business failed, that business failed. What the people in their mind remember is The Apprentice.
Right.
That's a vision. That's television. That is always going to be more real than what some nerd like Marco Rubio says. Actually, those businesses failed.
And
you have a small penis.
My former betrothed made a documentary on the photographers, or at least one of whom was picked by Castro to tell the story of the Revolution in Pictures. Mm. You know, he knew, I mean, part of it was because so many folks were illiterate in Cuba at the time. But just the power of images is just much, much more powerful.
Oh, yeah.
You can't, it's just, you're fighting against a reality where they've seen the dynamic, where he's firing people.
He's firing Gary Busey. Yeah. Star of the Buddy Holly story.
Oh, yeah.
He making meatloaf his bitch.
Well, I'm glad you guys are all so pessimistic about the chance of space comrades, but we're actually going to talk about that on Antifada this weekend, so maybe we'll change your minds.
All right, there you go.
Fasadism. It's real.
Lastly, let's talk a little bit about Laura Ingraham. Now,
Jesus.
I know that we played this yesterday. Laura Ingraham, let's just play a little
clip.
She's
on one.
Did you ever have any run-ins with her back in the Obermann or Air America days?
I did not. I mean, when we did our evening show, we were on against her for part of the time slot. I can't remember. We were at 7 to 9. We were across two different time. Not 7 to 9. 7 to 10. We were across two different. Maybe she was on at 9 on ABC. We beat her. That's the only thing I remember.
We beat her. That's all that matters.
And
then she got cancer, which was terrible.
It was pre-nose work.
Nice.
I'm sorry.
Well done.
I not supposed to say anything about that?
No, it was beautiful. I'm all for that.
Listen, I'm not going to judge anybody because of that. So here's Laura Ingraham yesterday talking about the problem with America.
We played this yesterday.
Yeah.
Because in some parts of the country, it does seem like the America that we know and love doesn't exist anymore. massive demographic changes have been foisted upon the American people. And they're changes that none of us ever voted for and most of us don't like. From Virginia to California, we see stark examples of how radically, in some ways, the country has changed.
All right, pause it. Let's just assess what we've been talking here. We're seeing images of migrant farm workers. She's talking about California and Virginia, and she's talking about demographics. I want people to just take a moment and imagine all the things that could be involved in that. And now a lot of people are saying, well, she's talking about race or something. Well, no, she's not, apparently. Here she is the night after her non-racist screed.
The purpose of last night's angle was to point out that the rule of law, meaning secure borders,
she did get a nose
is
job.
Something that used to bind our country together. And despite what some may be contending, I made explicitly clear that my commentary had nothing to do with race or ethnicity, but rather a shared goal of keeping America safe and her citizens safe and prosperous.
Now, Matt, you've taken English, right, as a class at one point?
Yeah.
Demographics. Is that about, like, does that mean a shared goal?
Demography is typically the study of populations by their racial or ethnic content, like, you know.
Okay, typically.
Typically.
But what about atypically?
I just don't know. I don't know. Like, demographics is pretty unambiguous of a concept. It's like the checking the boxes for the race on the form, and then you get a demographic breakdown according to that information.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty
sure. It doesn't mean about shared goals. Hold up, because there's a G in it.
What goals do these people have that she's terrified of?
The shared goals of
demographic.
White genocide.
I actually, yesterday we were praising her for not hiding the ball.
Okay, a particular sector of a population. Like the sector of a population that has
subdivision.
Classes.
That is demonstrably, that is separate and different from other segments of that population.
Those without goals.
It's the demographic goals.
Keep playing. Let's see what she said. Maybe we just don't understand the Ingram angle. I'm starting to think that maybe it's not even an angle, that it's really more like of a curve. But go ahead.
Furthermore, as I have said repeatedly on this show, merit-based immigration does wonders for our country's economy, our way of life, and how we define our country. I even said that in my opening thoughts last night. I want to make it really clear that my concern will continue to remain with the families who have suffered the tragic results of illegal immigration. The children put in dangerous and unfair situations at the border, and all those border agents around the country who work to keep our country safe.
Her big defense is that she adopted a child from Central America. Is that right?
Boom.
Is that true?
Yes.
Oh, QED.
QED.
I say good day, sir.
this is going around a lot. And now I think I want to make this clear. This is completely unfair. I want to make this absolutely clear. I'm saying it before we show it. This is completely unfair. And I am in no way think that anybody should assume anything by our playing this at all. Let's play it. What's she doing there? Completely unfair of us to play this. Or she accidentally.
Wow.
Is that how she greets her kid from Guatemala in the morning?
That is weird.
It's
weird, right?
She's
But. Andrew Jackson had an adopted Indian child, and no one would argue that he was racist against Native Americans.
There you go. Is that right? I didn't know
he did. After he massacred all the Creeks, he adopted one of them.
And there's I read a Jim Webb column where he's just like, what most liberal scholars won't acknowledge is that he brought an engine son for himself. And
QED.
As his own.
Right.
Yep.
Roasted with logic and facts. But don't care about your feelings.
She's not a racist, guys, okay? She's a Western chauvinist. It's totally different.
But Mexico is in the West.
Uh-oh.
Now, Central America is in the West.
Uh-oh.
Like, you can't even get off. You can't even, like, pull the thing like the European races do about, like, Islam is, like, a different, like, value system. They're Christians. They have a Western value system.
She was talking about a specific part of the West, obviously. Like, the part that's white.
They don't speak English. The Northwest. Northwestern values.
Northwest. See, they should say that. Northwestern values.
I'm a Northwestern values chauvinist.
Northwestern hemisphere pride.
Let's go to the phones. Do you mind sticking around? Answering,
no, of course.
Maybe listening to a couple of phone calls? Yeah. Calling from a 509 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Sam.
Yes.
This is Mormon God.
Mormon God. Oh, wow. We have not heard from you ever, as far as I know.
Constant listener, first-time caller. On Monday's show, you asked if I'm capable of striking down Brother Orrin Hatch with a bolt of lightning. First of all, what do I look like? Unitarian God? Of course I do lightning.
Right? Well.
But I would never do that to Brother Hatch. He's in my top 12 favorite Mormons. Rounding out that list, of course, are Danny Ainge, Donny Osmond, Marie Osmond, Greg Kite, Steve Young, Merrill Osmond, Alan Osmond, Wayne Osmond, Jimmy Osmond, Gladys Knight, and Tag Romney.
Gladys Knight.
Tag Romney. You know, first off, I'd love to hear there was two Celtics, former Celtics, I think, that you mentioned there, right? Was Greg Kite, or maybe I'm thinking of a different Greg Kite.
I think Greg Kite was
Indeed. Shout out to Greg Kite.
Yes, Greg Kite.
Well, by the way.
It's like the fifth guy off the
bench.
By
the way.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Gladys Knight making that list is proof that I'm not a racist. I just want to point that out.
Well, that's great.
No love for Glenn Beck. Harsh.
Yeah, that's a little bit tough. I love the Tag Romney inclusion. I've been thinking a lot about Tag Romney lately.
What do you think of Glenn Beck?
Well, Glenn's got a ways to go. But I wanted to say, even though I'm capable of striking down Brother Hatch, I have no time for that. In fact, when Brother Hatch made those hypocritical comments, I was about 10 hours into a 45-way with some of my celestial wives. Now, Sam, don't be bashful. I saw what you were up to last week in New Orleans. And, Sam, I got to say, you don't have to feel bad about it. Get it while you can. The good news is you can be baptized a Mormon after you die.
Thank you.
It's a real win-win.
Yeah.
It's a real win-win for heathen Jews like yourself.
I understand you guys do that quite a bit.
Good on you. Good on you. Yes, in fact, your name is already on a list somewhere, and when you die, you will be summarily baptized, and you can accept my son, Jesus Christ, as your Savior, and we'll take care of all your sins after the fact. It's a real bonus.
Much appreciated.
That sounds like a win-win-win, no?
I find the Mormon,
Mormon
that.
God, I like the Mormon thing. Yeah, as far as gods go, you're pretty agreeable. Yeah. I appreciate the call.
Totally.
No problem. Anytime.
Wait, did you have a question for Mormon?
No. Okay. I just wanted to say that that's not Mormon God, and I know because he didn't end it by pitching a multi-level marketing scheme where you sell decorative Jell-O molds.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
why not health supplements? Decorative Jell-O.
They love Jell-O. That's the thing about Mormons.
Sugar is the only drug they're allowed to have.
So they mainline it.
Interesting.
They mainline Jell-O.
That's interesting. Because my experience in the Midwest has been that everything is sugared, candied. All foods are candied before it's served, as far as I can tell.
Well, Mormons are sort of like they're the platonic Midwesterner. Like, actual Midwesterners are the deformed, debased, base version
of like
of
the slightly genetically modified.
Yeah, they're the GMO version. They're the organic.
They're the true.
Yeah.
All right, that's good. Well, that's good. Calling from a 512 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
This is Tammy calling from Gilroy, California.
Hello, Tammy. What's on your
Garlic
mind?
Capital.
Is it a drug?
I need y'all's indulgence here on Fun Friday. I want to read this so that I make the fast and get it right.
How long?
Here we go.
Oh, wait. How long is it?
3 minutes tops.
Let's see.
Can but I'm a fast talker.
Okay.
No, you want me to do this. Trust me, Sam, I have to do this. It's important.
Okay. Let's hear it.
On August 1st, one of the coolest people you've probably never heard of died. Before there was a Netroots Nation, or bloggers were commonly called bloggers, way back in 2000, Mark Perkel found the liberal voices on the web, people like Bart Kopp, Brad Friedman, and me, and offered us free hosting and eternal digital protection. He was a prolific letter to the editor, writer, and the first real nerd on staff at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Mark liked to throw his hat in the ring. Sometimes he threw a blue hat, sometimes a red one. He ran against John Ashcroft for the Republican Party's Missouri U.S. Senator nomination in 2000, and that wasn't his first race. He challenged the incumbent that time in the hopes that Ashcroft would get tapped by George W. Bush for some sweet, sweet patronage gig. W. lost the vote but won the Supreme Court, and Ashcroft became our bizarro attorney general. Don't get me started about Crisco, Lady Justice's knockers, or Let the Eagle Soar. During that primary, Mark's support for legalized prostitution and sex workers' rights caused the following attack to be hurled at him. "You're for free love," to which Mark responded, "No, Ashcroft is for that. I'm for letting the market decide." Mark lost the primary to John Ashcroft, who went on to lose the general to the Democratic nominee, Mel Carnahan, who was most assuredly dead. Mark founded the Church of Reality and owns the trademark on capital R Reality as a spiritual and self-help path. I'm a member. I spend at least as much time thinking about reality as most religious people on earth spend thinking about God. When Fox News went looking for a liberal to go on camera and be mocked, Mark offered himself. In the pre-interview, he told Fox producers he'd say one thing. When he got on the air, he'd say another thing. He helped teach Tucker Carlson how to make that goofy trademark desperately confused face. Mark wasn't just a patron of the Netroots. He was a generous benefactor to friends, strangers, and other living things in trouble or need. When he bought his house and the prior owners abandoned their beautiful white cat on the way out, Mark rescued him. Then a baby squirrel fell out of one of the trees and couldn't find its way home. In swooped Mark to play Squirrel Mama. Ganesha was the squirrel's name. Google the videos. They're amazing. Mark was also a badass gardener and homemaker. His place in Gilroy, garlic capital of the world, is beautiful. Mark Perkel was one of the best friends of my entire life and my superhero. He saved my life. In the words of Rose from Titanic, he saved me in every way a person can be saved. Maybe that's why he trusted me to come to California to take care of him and to be the only person with him when he died. Whether you knew him or just now hearing about him, Mark left Earth knowing he was loved and smothered in snuggles, hugs, kisses, etc. I got the oxytocin and dopamine and endorphins flowing, and the staff at Kaiser San Jose kept increasing the dose. I'm grateful for them, but not as grateful as I am that I knew Mark Perkel. Thanks for listening to me talk about the greatest Star Trek fan who ever lived. Mark also loves Seth MacFarlane's The Orville. Thanks, Sam.
All right, Tammy. I'm sorry for your loss. Thanks for letting us know about Mark. Hang in there.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, sad. Lost, there was, yeah, it's, I appreciate Tammy calling in with that. Calling from an 847 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Brian from Minneapolis.
Hello, Brian. What's on your mind?
Hey, well, first I want to say, first time, long time. Actually, this time. I listened to you and Janine on, like, the first night on Air America.
Wow, you must be old.
And I read a story of your show about... I was in college at the time. I'm in grad school now.
Wow, you must be really but, taking your time.
Well, you know, I have a little job in between.
Okay. He's waiting out capitalism. It's very smart.
That's how you respond to a caller.
Exactly.
Thank you, Matt. It's very, be a little more gentlemanly, Sam. Jesus.
That's what he got.
So, I saw something really hilarious on the internet, and I wanted to share it with you guys. So, Alex Jones, you know, he has a shop on his Infowars site. He sells all his supplements and whatnot.
Of course.
He also sells coffee on there. He sells a blend of coffee. It's called the Wake Up America Patriot blend.
Right, of course.
And he's got, like, you know, there's a few paragraphs on the website hawking the coffee, telling about, like, how, where it's grown and everything.
to the throne in the mountains, and these indigenous farmers who know all these indigenous secrets about tilling the land and everything. And he talks about, you know, they're getting well paid and it's, you know, fairer than fair trade. And this coffee comes from the state, the Mexican state of Chiapas.
What? That's amazing.
So, shut your mouth.
Those who may not be aware, he's getting coffee from anarcho-communist coffee collectives.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Folks, look, I've always said subcommandante Marcos, okay? He's one of the guys bringing down the deep state.
I talked to subcommandant Marcos, great guy. We got, I think he's got all the documents, and he gets what's going on. Him and Trump are in direct in communication through me.
Completely impromptu.
Is he going to become a Zapatista now? What's going on?
That doesn't seem...
Well, I mean, it's a...
I'm not shocked by that.
He had a period of time where he would occasionally give, like... He would interview people, you know, not that he was ever good, but he used to have a little bit of like a pretend I'm like an omnivore of conspiracies across the political spectrum phase. Maybe that's a remnant of that.
And good business practices. Glad to hear it.
I was going to say, yeah, you'd think. You just, yeah. I'm going to go buy his coffee now.
But yeah, don't forget, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use a coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off.
Yes, but this Rabbi Shiva would say... Was it thrown by the Zapatistas?
Maybe it went through there. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Wow, we're getting the full range here. You're calling from a 919 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, how's it going? This is David from Raleigh.
Dave from Raleigh. What's on your mind?
Man, well, did you catch that Joe Rogan experience yesterday? God, that was awful.
I did not. I did not catch the Joe Rogan experience yesterday, but please, please inform me.
It is good you didn't get that experience. We might need to get some experience, unfortunately. Jimmy Dore was on yesterday again, and dude was nuts.
Oh, God. Jesus, really? That's the advantage of living in L.A.
What did he say?
What did Jimmy Dore say? You know, I did see a video where Jimmy Dore was taking the Democrats to task about their inability to stop Brett Kavanaugh, which, of course, is a conversation that we had 2 years, I don't know, to the day here when I said they're not going to be able to stop him. And he said the moon could go into Lake Michigan. Now, that did not come up in his 20-minute video when he was discussing this, the whole moon dropping into Lake Michigan dynamic when you're talking about filibusters and Supreme Court nominees. But what did he say on Joe Rogan's show?
Well, I couldn't watch the whole thing, but I did watch, you know, I made as far as I could with that experience. And the very first 5 minutes with Joe Rogan is saying... apparently, Jimmy was already blowing up in the green room. He was responding to Henry Rollins, apparently, had made some remarks, and Joe Rogan had clipped it. And I guess somehow Jimmy was, you know, replying to it in the green room. They start out there, and he immediately jumps into whataboutism. It's like outright whataboutism. And it's to the point that I don't understand why people just should just listen to Vladimir Putin's speeches at this point. If you're listening to Jimmy Dore, because why not just get it directly? Like, he's parroting everything that Vladimir Putin says and then some. Let me just use one quote. He began by misusing Noam Chomsky, as he regularly does. And he starts. Yeah, he immediately says that Chomsky. I've never found this quote. Someone pointed out if he even said it once. He says that Chomsky calls it a Russia hysteria. That's already something that I can't find. He calls it a distraction. Those are two huge different things. A distraction can be something that's real. You can be overly exerting your energy on something and be distracted by it, but it can also be something that does deserve some attention. And he just blows it off and calls it a Russia hysteria and doesn't even use Noam Chomsky's actual words. He calls it a distraction. And I want to be clear. When he calls it a distraction, he's not saying it's not true. He's saying there's many things that Republicans are doing effectively right now in Congress and in the Senate, you know, and he's right. They are doing many things. And but Chomsky's words.
I feel like Jimmy has like one of those like filters on his whatever his Twitter app is, where he only gets Neera Tanden's tweets that that ran in like the first half of 2017.
Wait. What
like,
did
like I it just like the it just seems to me like the fears of World War III with Russia are slightly overblown.
Why are you not afraid of war with Iran? I know I'm a broken record, but that can happen. That's possibly in play. They're not going to go to war with Russia. It's ludicrous. Iran is I don't want to say probable, but it's totally in play.
Can I ask what Henry Rollins said? Is he sending the Neera Tanden tweets now, or what's my boy doing?
Well, I mean, it's been a while since I saw the Rollins clip, but I mean, I really don't want to speak for him, but to paraphrase it, I think he was just generally speaking, he was just honest about how corrupt and thug-like that Trump is. You know, he acts like a mob boss. I mean, and I think Rollins just essentially just took him to task on how this president is different from other presidents. And what Jimmy Dore does is he throws out a false equivalency that this president, he doesn't even focus on anything he's done. He just says it's like our other presidents, and he calls them war criminals. And he says, and I don't even know if this is true, but it definitely appears a warping of Noam Chomsky's words. He says that Noam Chomsky said any president, you know, after the after Reagan or something could be charged under the Nuremberg trial.
Oh, that's true. There are two things that can that can be true here. One is that I think it's actually probably accurate to say that every president after it's conceivable it could be through Nixon. maybe every president that we've had could be brought in front of the Nuremberg trials for war crimes. I don't think that's I don't think
recognize
that's
your white court.
I do think that you know you can make a some type of like assessment that hey, George Bush was responsible even by the most conservative estimates for killing several hundred thousand. I mean, there's like Defense Department numbers. I think or like last I checked were upwards near 200,000 civilians. Died because of that Iraq war. Donald Trump has not gotten to that point. Nevertheless, it's like, I don't know what the value is. Like, the idea that Jimmy Dore is teaching anybody about anything is laughable. And the idea...
we need to hold him to his... Yeah, go ahead. We need to hold him to his own standard. He always is talking about, well, they take money from blah, blah, blah. Don't listen to this. These people, they take money from there. He takes money from Russia. He works now. He takes guest spots on Russia Today. I mean,
well,
you can get some information from Russia Today.
I mean, look, I don't need to hold Jimmy Dore to any standard other than just rationality and not being stupid. Honestly, like, I don't care. I took money when I did my book. Yeah. I took money from Rupert Murdoch.
That's disgusting.
I don't care. I'll spend his money.
Yeah.
Vladimir Putin's money too. I don't give a crap. But the problem is not that he's getting paid by Vladimir Putin to fill in for, you know, a wrestler or whatever it is. The problem is that he's an idiot. And he espouses stupidity.
Spot too. He's looking for the whole fucking spot. He's looking for his own show. And, you know, he said it before. He would work for Fox. He jokes about it.
But that's not why he's bad. Why he's a malignancy. It's because he's stupid. And he's talking out of his ass. And he's basically disempowering people, and he doesn't understand what politics are. And that's all well and good for a guy sitting at a bar moaning about it. But the problem is he's not. He's given a big platform, and that's what he does with it. That's my issue with him. But I appreciate the call.
No problem. I hope you guys clip some of it and you know, take it on.
Well, we might.
I know you do have.
We might.
You have a fair amount of Jimmy Dore fans, which is always surprising.
Well,
what about Noam Chomsky?
I appreciate the call.
All right.
Appreciate the call.
I'm Noam sorry. Chomsky. I mean, we,
that's what they call him. That's what they call Noam Chomsky. That's what they call Noam when he's hungry.
Yeah. don't get between Noam Chomsky and a buffet.
Let's go to the IMs. Too many way. Treating the Space Force as a joke. I'm afraid this is being orchestrated so the Russians can militarize space. Everything Trump does can be explained by one of three motives.
Is that serious?
This one.
That's a joke. That's a joke. That's got to be. Is that a good cuck joke setup?
I don't know, man. I don't. That's the thing. It's like I would believe anybody if any like paranoia about Russia. What people have said, what people have tried to connect between any random misfiring of Trump's brain and Russian influence is so absurd that I'd believe anybody has any take on anything being Russian inspired.
I think the easy answer for it is like, where is he going to get money off of it? Like, you know, what seller of space bazookas is saying, like, you own 5% of our business now, President Trump. And that's basically the most obvious explanation. Tim from Boston. Hi, Sam, Brendan, Jamie, Matt, Michael, and Chappaquiddick, a Trappist housing enthusiast. I pre-ordered your book.
Oh, thank you.
It was difficult to sort things out between calling from an iPad and trying to set my Mac to stream the show from the site. Well, we're not streaming today. We have a problem. Anyway, I'm on my 10th call after the first 9 dropped, probably due to me literally. Okay, there were many calls the other day. I never made it to the line. Mazel tov, Ronald Reagan, Baba Booey. I'm calling from a 781 area code. Okay, I get a...
I like how people are trying to sync up there.
And there's no 781 area code on the thing right now. Calling from an 858 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hold on. Let me... Crap. Oh, yeah. This is Tomas from San Diego.
Tomas from San Diego. What is on your mind, sir?
Yeah, I was just going to tell you about this study. It's on Vox. Mm-hmm. It's about how left-wingers get fired for their opinions way more on college campuses.
Yes, I've seen that. I don't believe it because Dave Rubin tells me it's not so.
Yeah, Dave Rubin. Yeah, and I'm looking at this, and then I used to follow these IDW guys, but it's like now it's just like it's so obvious that they have a victim complex.
How did you end up leaving them? How did you end up finding them, and how did you end up leaving? I'm always interested in these type of stories.
Well, like, Jordan Peterson, I found from, I think, the David Packman show. Like, he interviewed him a while back. And, yeah, and then, Dave Rubin's show, I used to be really into, but... He just started inviting on the most heinous figures. And, I got into them, and then I found your show. And then Michael did a good analysis on how they're such frauds and, they have such a big victim complex. It's kind of ridiculous.
Well, yes, you're correct. And yeah, I've seen that report. I'm waiting. Dave Rubin's on vacation. I'm waiting for him to come back to Twitter so that I can.
He focuses on ideas.
Yeah,
he focuses on ideas.
Yeah. It's more of an idea.
He's just such a so disingenuous.
Well, I think you've said that well. Appreciate the call. Back to the IMs. Intellectual fag web. The only reason Ben Shapiro is so against government intervention to benefit people's personal lives is because he has to use a booster seat in 23 states.
Yeah, he's been taunted too many times by the "you must be this tall to ride the ride" thing.
There you go. He can't go on the bumper cars. He's super pissed.
Oh, my God. AOC should have been like, "he must be this tall to debate."
Alpha male Dr. G. Gorka here. You may disparage my dabbing, but I'd like to remind you of a certain nebbish dad doing the same exact thing with noodly arms in a Walmart sweater. Oh, who's laughing now, Sam?
We were a superpower. We are now a hyperpower.
David Brooks, poor friend. Hey, guys. I'm at lunch and need to know what capers are, and I thought you snobs might know. Thanks.
Oh, that's a really good one. I like that. That has legs.
Brave-O-Matic. If the folks in the studio are not familiar with lawn darts, they need to Google image Jarts lawn darts. When I was about bar mitzvah age, we used to play a game that involved throwing jarts over the house to see what we could hit. Fun. Rob from Philly. Chomsky made U.S. President Nuremberg comment many times, and as you may expect, Chomsky backs it up with fact. Nick from Manitoba.
Chomsky also said to vote for Hillary over Republicans.
Mm, that's right.
Did he ever?
Hey, Jamie, imagine this, if you will. Karl Marx, Peter Kropotkin, Sergei Zinoviev Nechevya in loincloths, lathered in sweat from collective toil as they bring home the bread to humanity. What say you? Ann Prim?
Still going to go with the no on Amprim. I'm very sorry. I mean, if you read some...
I think Matt's
got a comment on this.
I have glasses, so no Amprim for me, thanks.
I mean, if you read some of this stuff like, what's his name, Zerzan or whatever, they think the problem started when humans invented language.
Yeah.
And I have been known to talk a bit, so maybe not for me.
Although, I don't, I mean, maybe... I thought that sounded silly to me until I first saw Twitter, folks.
Right.
Am I right?
Yeah. Mm.
2H2N. Shout out to Matt for trying his best to give us video today. We appreciate you, Matt. Thank you. Yes.
Yes,
yes Matt.
Valiant
nice try.
Effort.
Nice try. Thames Darwin. Sam, just an FYI, Shapiro broke Shabbos to do Mars show, so don't let the little worm beg off debating you on those grounds. Tell him
that
you debate.
Little prick.
That is disgusting.
How dare you?
I tell you, honestly, like... You don't get to quote yourself as an Orthodox Jew if you don't.
No, he went to a rabbi. Rabbis will give you permission
true.
To do anything.
Although, I don't know about that because don't they do the live?
No, they do a live
room?
Show. Bill Maher's show's live.
It has live audience, but that's what
when
that's
I
good
recall,
point.
It,
I'll tell you this:
when I watched it was live.
I got asked to do a Seinfeld on Yom Kippur by a Jewish casting director. What he literally drove up. I was pulling out of CBS. He pulls up. He's like, "Why aren't you doing it?" I'm like, "Dude, it's on fucking Yom Kippur." The guy's name was like, I'm not going to say who it was, but it was like literally like
Bernie Bernstein.
Honestly, like let more Jewish. And I'm like, "Dude, are you you don't think Jerry Seinfeld knows that it's fucking Yom Kippur? I'm not going to do it." And I mean, I'm not that religious of a person, but I'm not going to go on the holiest day of the year to do a fucking sitcom. Mm. I mean, give me a break, Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro, I'll pay you $10,000 to justify me how an Orthodox Jew can go work on Shabbat just so that you get to be famous? It's disgusting.
No, it's a deeper mission. Fucking take health care away
Abraham
from people.
And Rebecca and Joseph and all of them would be turning in their graves right now.
Can I have a special exemption to talk about killing Palestinians with Bill Maher?
That's right. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
He could have gotten a Shabbos Goy to do it.
Shabbos Goy Shapiro. Oh, shit. That's.
You could have had somebody else.
That's your best idea in a while.
Hi, I'm Bill McKenzie. I've been filling in for
I'm Ben Shapiro, Shabbos Goy. And you just made a logical fallacy.
Jesus. Lehman Sisters. Progressive populism really thrives in urban rural areas. Wealthy suburbs over 60,000 will be trickier to win over. Do you think the Ben Shapiros of the world are scared of AOC, or are they truly delusional enough to think that she's going to hurt the party or his pod? He says white candidates like Sanders. I just think these guys are attracted to whatever is like garnering attention because
yeah.
they're businessmen. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
like she's
it.
In the headlines, so we need to talk about her, and we need to make the story about us. Yeah.
Exactly. And there is, you know, they have no experience in actually debating policies that are so nakedly offered.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in the past, the problem is that the Democrat, I mean, there was a story about the Third Way that we're trying to repackage. They were trying to call it like Democratic opportunists, you know,
yes.
opportunity.
Yeah, Democratic opportunists.
Opportunity,
network. Okay.
Yeah, but opportunity Democrats.
Yes,
or
yes, that was it. The opportunity Democrats.
And the whole piece was about how they're trying to figure out how to sell something that they know it's like not a, like an easy sell.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not as hard to sell as Republicanism, but it's just not an easy sell. And the advantage that folks like AOC have is that they don't have to, they just tell people what the policy is.
Yeah.
They should have a media strategy. And the conservatives have never had to debate that.
Nope, they got flabby. They got flabby beating the shit out of market-tested Brill Cream Democrats talking gibberish about opportunity and entrepreneurship in totally vague terms that just mean nothing to anybody.
And the way they shut them down is to call them a socialist.
Yeah.
And then the Democrat had to argue that I'm not a socialist, whereas these, you know, I don't know if they actually, but they embrace the term. They say, yeah, I mean, I explain this. Like, I used to get a call on Air America, someone calling like, you're a liberal. And I'm like, I'm on a liberal talk radio network. What are you talking about? Of course, I'm to the left of being a liberal. Wait, you just admitted it. Yeah, I know. I'm on a liberal talk radio network. We brand ourselves that way. And they don't know what to deal with that at that point.
Yeah.
It's
yeah, and they've spent 8 years calling Obama's tepid liberalism socialism. So now actual socialism, they don't have another word for it, like mega socialism,
super socialism,
super socialism,
uber socialism.
Yeah.
Maoism.
They are going to get their talking points in order eventually on this stuff, but it's so fun to watch them flail in the meantime.
There was a similar dynamic with Reverend Wright when Reverend Wright was Obama's secret pastor.
If only it were so.
That was the thing for, you know, like when that came out, I was like, oh, this is good. He could actually be good. But now I don't actually believe that he was in the pew at the time. But
no, it really wasn't.
But when he came out and acknowledged Reverend Wright, it completely fell apart because the pitch was that he's doing it in secret. He's hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an indication that they're doing something wrong. And in the opposite is works with Trump and Chris Collins. You come out and you're just like naked about
yeah.
it. How bad can it be? They've basically embraced it in public.
Yeah, people, I mean, things move fast. People forget it. It's the way to go.
Winnipeg, Craig. The premium chapo today was fantastic. Great cue coverage.
Oh, thank you.
Just to respond to the previous IM, boo Matt for the streaming failure. New human. In the Dick Tracy comic strip, criminal syndicates would put money into orbit to hide and transfer it. This will make a large majority of Space Force's missions. All right, we'll take two more quick calls. Calling from a 413 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Sam, it's Dave from the Berkshires.
Dave from the Berkshires. What's on your mind, Dave from the Berkshires?
Well, what's on my mind is that... I think the reason why I got off the IDW clowns is because they're just so boring.
Mm. Word.
Okay. The other thing, I wanted to bring this up. Michael.
Yeah.
Does he have a budget for clothes? Because his T-shirt selection is very, very narrow.
Right.
Looking like a fam.
Whose T-shirt collection? Mike's?
He said me. Me.
Michael.
Yeah.
Michael,
okay. You are sharing.
Can you give him some
traits.
Extra money to get some new T-shirts or something?
Well, you should definitely give me more money. But you're like the IDW guys right now, dude. You're boring.
I'm boring.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Some people can't handle debate about real issues.
Yeah. You just own me with facts and logic.
I don't think I did, but the. My cousins are,
sell T-shirts,
roaming over California, and they think that the world is flat. Do you guys think this is a con or
no? I agree with that.
What's up with all this QAnon and
Kyrie Irving convinced
stuff?
Me of that.
Well, I mean, look, you know. Part of it is it's entertaining, and if you can't explain and deal with things, you know, that's you make it up to fit. I mean, it's old school conspiracy theory, but I appreciate the phone call, and I totally agree about the sartorial issues.
Shirts, right.
There's just so many people in the world that the odds are fair chunk of them are going to believe in just absolutely wrong things, and it's going to be sensational.
I have to say, Flat Earth one is the least, like, cool. Of all of the misinformation to believe in, that has, like, the least material benefit of any of them. Like, if you're not focusing on, like, racism or Trump or... Like, great, the Earth's flat, whatever.
That's what makes it the best one.
Welcome, yeah, it's awesome. I don't care.
Welcome, comrade flat earthers.
Yeah, exactly.
Final call of the day, calling from a 214 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
This is Alex calling from Dallas.
Alex from Dallas, what's on your mind?
Hey, so I was listening to the stream about Brazilian elections yesterday.
Okay.
And it made me really upset. And the reason is I want to qualify by saying that I'm an American, but I'm also Brazilian. I'm dual citizen. I've lived in Brazil, and, in the U.S. I'm very liberal, very left wing, you know, Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders. I do think that they're the leaders of tomorrow's America. But it really bugged me that, I forget the guy's name that was talking about it yesterday, the bald dude, whatever his name was. He was making a comparison between, you know, Brazil and like the rise of like a right wing nationalism, and it really bothered me that he was trying to transplant the American paradigm of left-wing politics to Brazil, when it's completely, it doesn't fit at all. It doesn't fit. And to try to make Lula seem like, you know, a popular guy, a guy that everybody in Brazil loves, is really just an uneducated opinion. I don't care what polls you're looking at. If you're talking to educated Brazilians, they're not supporting Lula, and there's a reason for that.
Right, they have money.
No, it's not because they have money.
Dude,
it's because
let's just make his arm.
Hold on.
Just take it easy.
You're just some guy. You're some guy who's never lived in Brazil. You don't know the reality of the ground of what Brazilian people experience, okay? What they do is they give handouts. And I'm not saying that like American right-wingers say handouts. I'm talking, they literally give these poor people money, okay? And they tell, here, we're going to give you a little bit of money, and you support us. So they're not actually interested in the well-being of poor people in Brazil. They're really not. And you can see that because BT-controlled areas, like Nordeste and the north of Brazil, they're the shittiest parts of Brazil. And there's a reason for that. São Paulo, if you look at São Paulo, who's had a mayor, PSDB, with a more centrist, who wants a more globalized economy, they're much more successful. Okay. Lula has installed his cronies into Brazil, on the Supreme Court, in everywhere. It is a miracle that Brazil is recovering from his corruption. And you talking to this guy is essentially like you calling Kellyanne Conway and asking her, well, you know, what do you think of this this Mueller probe? It's a witch hunt. It's a complete witch hunt. And, oh,
all right.
Wow.
So your argument is that Lula was corrupt, that they gave money to poor people to win their affection, as opposed to that they really like them.
No, not like, I'm not talking about investing in infrastructure. I'm not talking about investing in education. I'm talking.
So it's more like Tammany Hall type of stuff.
Huh?
More like Tammany Hall type of stuff.
I'm not familiar with that.
Patronage and cash payments.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
All right. Well, I mean, I appreciate the perspective.
It's just, I can I ask something? I just want, if you really care about Brazil like I do, because my family lives there, I really do ask that you put in a little bit more effort into finding at least an opposing view.
Do you have
an opposing view? Because
do you have a suggestion? Like, who? I mean, give us a sense of who would be, in your estimation, a fair arbiter?
I would say that the only fair arbiter is you guys.
No, no, no. But I'm saying, who do you think, like, you want a different perspective, right? What Brazilian perspective do you think it would be a good one for us to investigate?
I'm saying you can watch the C-SPAN of Brazil. You can watch global.
Well, I understand, but is there a writer that you think that captures a better perspective on Brazil?
I personally, I don't know any.
So you're just saying that from your own personal experience, you disagreed with the guest yesterday? Or Michael.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Powerful.
And look, I know that you're probably going to use that as, okay, I'm not going to listen to this guy. But
well, no, I mean, it's not a matter of using it, but I mean, like, you know, where do we go from there?
It doesn't strike
like, honestly,
you.
Like, where,
I think that if you really took an interest, you could talk to somebody a reporter from
Dude, you're from Brazil, and you can't even tell me who that person is.
What was wrong with the guy we had?
It's not that he what he said wasn't wrong.
You just said he was Kellyanne Conway. I would never have Kellyanne Conway on the program to talk about the Mueller investigation. All right, look, send us an email. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. If you have an idea of someone we can talk to, you know, who you think has a perspective that is more accurate. All right. Appreciate the call. Thanks,
yeah,
man.
I don't know.
Well,
yeah.
I've seen some good reporting from South America and Central America in Left Voice. They don't pretend to be neutral. So you always got to take what they say with a grain of salt. They collaborate with Trotskyist groups internationally, but they've actually had some very good reporting from an openly leftist perspective on a lot of these things going on in South America.
Doesn't it strike anyone that the terms in which he criticized Lula are precisely the ones that the right talks about Democrats here? I'll just seems kind of obvious.
That Democrats here give out money to...
Yes. That's what they say.
He's saying that they literally do that.
Well, that's Bolsa Familia, which is what Ezra Klein, the author we had on last week, he's talking about one of the most successful cash delivery programs in the world. I get that affluent Brazilians resent Lula.
But they get Lula phones. All right, well, we're going
to... Right, right, exactly. That was a Lula phone call with a recommendation to watch the Fox News of Brazil. I'll pass.
All right, that is the final call of the day. We will take a couple more IMs and then wrap it up here. The Mad Mall Man, Jimmy Dore, the fact that Cenk continues to give him a platform is the whole reason I dropped my TYT membership. Mr. Citizen, the Space Force is needed to keep out actual illegal aliens. JJ Cool, I thought I should help Matt L. out. I suppose to wait till the end of the day before messing with equipment to project your job over vacation. Gabe from Chicago, what is Space Force? It's a way to push military contracting so far out of oversight that you literally need the Hubble telescope to see how bad they're fucking us. Jason 13, can we get some solidarity on the left, please, while we're fighting fascists are taking over Weimar Germany much? Attorney Andrew, the world is flat from a 4D advantage. After Brunig found that the Koch study actually found $2 trillion savings in Medicare for All, there have been several pieces criticizing this figure as misleading because it's based on a lower cost estimate published in the Koch study, $32 trillion. Now there are several reasons why these critics are wrong. Namely, some of these critics cited this very number, the cost of Medicare for All. In short, all right, well, okay. Shapiro Shabbos Goy. I was going to do Mara's show, but Ben told me that arguing Palestinians aren't human sounds better than coming from a Jew and not a garden variety white guy. Next, Hex Hunter, my colleague who used to watch InfoWars, never seemed to be about politics as much as conspiracy theories. Now I'm worried how much watching that cancer would affect your view. And the final... Well, before we get to that, let's plug the book one more time.
Yes, Chapo Guide to Revolution.
Who gave the blurbs on that?
We got a good bunch of good ones. Patton Oswalt.
I know Patton, a very, very astute guy. Who
David
else?
Cross.
Cross, a longtime friend.
Tim Heidecker, good one.
Heidecker, very funny.
Glenn Greenwald gave us one.
Greenwald has done amazing work.
Brianna Joy. Yeah.
Brianna Joy, yeah. Yeah. Who else?
Are you on there?
No, I'm not.
I wasn't in charge of any of those decisions. I want that to be known.
There's one other, isn't there? Brendan, why don't you tell us who the last one is? Dave Anthony.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yes, my former friend who blocked me on Twitter.
Yeah, he's going to block me sooner or later, so I'll take it while I can.
You'll Dave be in Anthony, good company.
Who shut me out. Shut me out of his Twitter feed. It's really, I miss it. I miss it. But I don't understand how Dave Anthony gets on there. I mean, who the fuck? What the fuck? Dave Anthony?
Yeah, he's a friend of ours.
Like the second character on, third character on Marin.
It was a very good quote, though.
What was his quote?
He just said it, the book rules. I can't remember. It's good, though.
I mean, I would have been happy to say the book rules. I would have been happy to do that.
Like I said, that was not my department.
Dave Anthony. All right, and the final I am of the day, Sam's Tinder profile. Hey, girl, swipe right. It's the weekend. Let's go to the beach. I'll buy you a cider and tell you all about the apples that went into it.
What?
All right, I think it might be time to innovate.
See you folks Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice was made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow I lost my drive,